We first investigated 764 last year. It's when we met Ali Broadway, a young victim in Virginia.
I was scared to death. He would say, if you don't do this, then you don't love me.
The FBI had just issued a public advisory about the danger of 764 and similar groups like CVLT or Cult and Harm Nation. It was accompanied by a series of arrests in the United States and Europe, including Bradley Cadenhead, who was only 15 years old when he created 764 in 2020 and named it after his zip code in Texas. He was sentenced to 80 years in prison for possessing child pornography. Given its global reach, we tried to interview the RCMP for our original story, but it only responded with an email saying it is aware of the danger of the online group 764 and that it remains vigilant for potential threats. Since then, we've discovered the threat is only rising.
I just want to figure out what's going on. I want to try to get as many of these people behind bars as possible.
This is Becca. She's a private investigator who hunts online predators. Offline, she also trains as a competitive shooter. She's made 764 her biggest target. For her safety, we're not disclosing where she lives or her last name.
I felt an obligation to do what I could to help the kids, the victims, and to stop these people from doing this to more kids. I saw the video, Kyle Spitz's mom, and that kind of threw me into this world of 764.
At first, there was no connection between 764 and this chaotic video posted last year by a Tennessee man named Kyle Spitz.
Point that gun at me again.
The shooter was his mother's boyfriend, and as the video went viral, Spitz was initially hailed as a victim.
It wasn't until I started to see victims in the comment section saying, this guy's a member of a satanic cult. He had a 12-year-old victim. That girl had come to me for help. She was very afraid. But she did ultimately decide to go to the police after I talked to her for a while.
Becca posted what she had learned about Spitz, who went by criminal in 764.
And it went like what you would call viral. And it was only a few weeks later that they arrested him. Acid was a friend of Kyle Spitz. He would tell me to quit my reporting or they were going to find me and, rape and murder me. I remember this one time that my daughter was in the bed sleeping next to me and I got this message that said, in 30 minutes, if you don't delete everything about me, I'm going to have your house shot up. And I remember just having this this surreal moment of I'm living this normal life here with my kid and then at the same time I'm being threatened by satanic terrorists. And so I called and made a police report about it.
Police in the UK arrested Acid, whose real name is Cameron Finnegan, last March. The 19-year-old was sentenced to 9 years in prison for encouraging a victim to live stream her own suicide.
I don't think about stuff in that moment. That's just stupid. I say without thinking.
That lack of empathy is a chilling hallmark of 764.
21-year-old Caleb Merritt has abducted 12-year-old Ali Broadway.
We tracked down the man who raped and abducted her to a Virginia prison where he's serving a 33-year sentence. He was a founding member of CVLT, one of the original groups in the 764 network.
Why did you create this group?
It started out just as a way to get social media notoriety, I guess.
Did you share those images with other people and did that play into the notoriety that you were looking for?
Yes.
Did you think about the impact it would have on these young people?
Oh no, I had extreme empathy issues and sometimes I still do something I'm working on.
There has been a mass shooting in Buffalo, New York.
He told me about the group's fascination with mass shooters, especially those motivated by racism.
11 of those 13 shot were black.
Why was that appealing?
It was hateful, I guess.
Hateful thoughts?
Yeah.
Towards whom?
People who are different.
And what would that be?
Religious groups and certain minority groups.
I just refuse to let these guys scare me.
Becca says she has reported several 764 members to police.
I think that this is the greatest terror attack facing Western society. And I think it's only a matter of time before one of these kids succeeds in building a bomb or something even more devastating.
You just saw an ad for methylene blue. Tell people the short-term effect and then now the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some methylene blue about a half hour before. Gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Yeah, something like that. Give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support, theallstreetsreport.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know.
I like it better than doing like a five-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
If you'll just try, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. Now's the time. Get the methylene blue, bare minimum, thealexostore.com.
It's Thursday, August 28th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, it's down.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Coming to you, as always, live from the InfoWars studio here in Austin, Texas. We got a lot to talk about today, obviously, following up with the news that broke the end of the show yesterday. The mass shooting at a Catholic church in South Minneapolis. And yeah, it was exactly what we expected. I mean, but pretty much as soon as the news broke, we had all the information we pretty much needed to figure out what exactly was going on. And it was just kind of obvious. I mean, if you were watching the show yesterday, basically we learned that there was a shooting at a Catholic church and it had been about 2 hours and we hadn't had the shooter identified. And it's with that information alone, it was pretty easy to figure out, okay, it was probably a trans shooter and they were withholding the identification while they were scrubbing the internet of all of the very disturbing material that he'd uploaded previously. And that's exactly what was happening. Again, I'm not even really patting myself on the back. It's like, this is just, you should be able to do this yourself. You should be able to interpret these things on your own. So by the end of the show yesterday, we'd had very, very little information, but could understand what the facts were, regardless. Well, now those, our interpretation, our suppositions have been confirmed, and it was a trans shooter. They were associated in some way with the 764 pedophile satanic grooming gangs that we've covered extensively, thanks to Becca BX on X, which we'll have to get her on to talk about this, as she is the expert. Last time that there was a shooter with memes all over their gun, I explained the memes, then the ADL wrote an article about how I was therefore in favor of the shooting that happened. So I don't know, should I explain all of the meme culture that's on display here? Because that's mostly what you're looking at. I don't think, honestly, you can read a lot into the things written on his guns. We're seeing the videos here. I think it's just there to confuse. I think the fact that this person is associated with these online pedophile grooming gangs like Cult or 764, I think that's going to be the ideology that's motivating this. In other words, it's a complete lack of ideology. Not really believing anything. They'll basically put Nazi messages and, you know, the opposite of that. They'll put, references to mass shooters of any type, just looking for notoriety, looking for accelerationism. And of course, being transgender and this being an aspect of, you know, revenge against the trans genocide that the mainstream media has been pushing for so long. There's no small aspect of this. We're going to look into that dimension of this story pretty closely. Because if there's one thing that's been made abundantly clear over the last couple of years, it's that the Democrats are doing everything they possibly can to encourage this type of violence. I mean, here you have a terrorist attack, and the FBI is investigating it as a domestic terror attack, meaning it was ideologically motivated, attacking innocent people for political purposes. And if that's the case, then this person was radicalized. And so then you have to ask, well, who's doing the radicalizing? Who were they radicalized by? And you really don't have to go any farther than like the local politicians there. Go look at some of the statements Tim Walz has said about transgenderism. I mean, I think the day before, Tim Walz was celebrating some transgender day of awareness. Remember, they declared the transgender day of awareness after the last shooting, the Rupnow transgender shooting of a Christian school. I mean, they're not only giving these mentally unwell and unstable people all of the, you know, internal justification they need to carry out an attack like this, but then they actually reward them afterwards by being more supportive of the, transgender ideology following one of these brutal attacks. And, you know, of course, as some of the best coverage on this, and we've got, and we can get into sort of, again, where this all came from, NGOcomment.com. Why, NGO, yeah, nocomment.com. Oh, I get it, no comment. That's clever. Why the media won't tell you who killed children at Annunciation Catholic Church in Minneapolis. From Nashville to Minneapolis, the trans violence the media ignores. On Wednesday morning, a gunman dressed in black opened fire at Annunciation Catholic Church and school in Minneapolis where children were celebrating Mass. At least 2 young children were killed and 17 others, mostly children, were injured. The shooter, who killed himself, identified as trans. The mass shooting and its media coverage echo what happened more than 2 years ago in Nashville when a trans shooter, Aubrey Aiden Hale, murdered 3 children and 3 staff at the Covenant School, a Christian school connected to the Covenant Presbyterian Church. In that case, the liberal press downplayed or completely ignored Hale's trans radicalism, despite the disturbing details revealed in her journals. Now, Democrats and much of the media are concealing the Minneapolis shooter's identity. The truth: 23-year-old Robin M. Westman of Minneapolis was previously known as Robert Paul Westman. He came from liberal St. Paul, Minnesota family that fully affirmed his transition as a minor. In 2020, his parents petitioned the court to change his legal identity. Robin identifies as female and wants her name to reflect that identification. His mother, Mary Westman, wrote in the filing, when Robert turned 18, his father, James Westman, marked the occasion with a public Facebook announcement using the trans color flags. Happy 18th birthday, Robin Westman, we love you. And there's the court filing showing that the name was changed with permission of the parents as a minor. Looks like other radicalized school shooters. Westman was extremely active online. He posted a now-deleted YouTube video flaunting his firearms and ammunition magazines, scrawled with messages and symbols like, quote, "Where is your God?" one read. "Kill Trump now," read another. "Israel must fall." On a magazine clip, he wrote, "For the children." He also made Nazi references, including racist and anti-Semitic slurs, and listed the names of past mass shooters. His video showed a shooting target pinned with Jesus's face, as well as pages of a goodbye letter and manifesto written in a mixture of English and poor Russian using the Cyrillic alphabet. It's basically as like a code. He was using the Russian alphabet, but using it to write phonetic English, essentially. Making these videos that you're seeing here that were uploaded to YouTube and swiftly deleted, but not before some archivists found it. So here he's showing his manifesto written in his pseudo-Russian code. There's a picture of Adam Lanza. As, like, probably most school shooters had an obsession with previous school shooters. But clearly was, and this was an anti-Christian terror attack. Of course, there was the, you know, writings on his gun saying Israel must end, 6 million wasn't enough. And these other sort of anti-Semitic things, people saying this was an anti-Semitic shooter. It's like, well, he did target a school of Christian children during Mass, so I think that was his primary target. He's got videos of Jesus Christ as a shooting target on his YouTube. quote, kill Donald Trump. America's being taken over by fascist tyrants, Weston wrote in a Cyrillic alphabet that had been partially decoded and posted online. They need to pay people like me to keep killing until people like me need to keep killing until the right people get fed up and decide to get involved and change the system. She loved how cowardly these people are. They're like, people like me need to keep killing children until the right people, you know, attack the dangerous ones. He's like, I wish I could kill the politicians, but I'm a little coward bitch, so I'm going to go shoot children instead. I'm going to go after the soft target to inspire those after me to go after the people that actually do bad things. Very brave, incredible. I call on you, those who want to kill, follow me and kill, itching for fun to send a message. It will not be in vain. Another decoded, it's completely in vain. In fact, we're going to make sure that this backfires on your very people. Like, this is going to be a major step towards eradicating the very existence of transgender people in this country. Not by killing them, not by doing any violence to them, but by treating them for the mental illness that they very clearly have and not continually reinforcing this dangerous delusion they're operating in. That image is one of the more famous ones out of this video. So clearly he's got the map of the chapel where he eventually carried out his attack drawn out here with a knife. Oh, very, very intimidating. You imagine planning to do this and still just failing in such a abysmal way. I don't know. I don't have any psychological, training to back this up. I just feel like mocking these people is a good idea. It's just something intrinsic in me says these people weren't bullied enough. And now, even after this attack, some people are saying, well, we're just not going to share the manifestos. We don't want to give this guy any attention. I think he needs negative attention so that everybody else who might be thinking of following in this guy's footsteps knows you are simply going to be mocked relentlessly. You're not going to go down as a martyr. You're not going to spark a revolution. You're going to fail abysmally to do anything of any impact. And then you're going to die a ridiculous joke. And then the death certificate is going to read male, not female, and everybody's going to know you as what you are forever, a psychotic idiot who's been brainwashed into thinking that they're the wrong body. They're a civil rights, martyr, when in reality, you're just an idiot loser that every action is going to contribute to the eradication of the very identity you think you're upholding. So we're just going to mock this person relentlessly. Just to let everybody know, you do something like this, nobody thinks you're a hero. You are a scum. You're just scum, and you're confirming everything everybody's ever said about you. So, don't do that. And then we're all going to refer to you by he. And if in 1,000 years from now, scientists dig up your skeleton, they too will be able to recognize in your very DNA what your sex was, is, and always will be. So just, you got to come to terms with that.
Also, speaking about confirming, this is also a warning to parents who are struggling with this type of thing, right? Like, do you confirm your kids' delusions, right?
Absolutely. These parents,
they could
did everything they were told to do, right? Everything that society tells parents they're supposed to do when it comes to transgender people, these parents dutifully did. And of course, all they did was contribute to the psychological profile that ended in this absolutely horrific and brutal mass killing. And we go back to that video of the journal. There's one image in particular, a self-portrait, if you will, of the shooter looking in a mirror. And of course, a horned, grinning demon staring back at him. And that might be, there's the image right there. And people translated this, and it's basically a schizophrenic, conversation between himself and the demon that inhabits him. Where you've got the soul, the remnants of the soul of the transgender person saying, why me? What's going on? Please leave me alone. And the demon saying, no, I celebrate. We kill somebody, kill yourself. And a lot of people online today and yesterday going, you know, never been a particularly faithful person. I've never believed in demons before, but I think I'm coming around to the idea. I think I'm learning to appreciate the reality of demonic forces at work in our world.
I'll take red flags for 500.
Yeah, right. Red flag after red flag. Again, we'll continue on this coverage, and I'll lay out some of the scientific, you know, underpinnings to get us to where we are now. But again, I think the overall sentiment from this is a very good thing coming out of the right wing, with everybody who's either tiptoed around this issue or tried to handle it with tact, as far as that goes, is now just going, yeah, you know what? No, we need to stop this. We need to cut this out. We need to punish the doctors that are contributing to this. We need to redefine this mental illness in the DSM, because we need to stop indoctrinating kids into this clearly satanic and just sickeningly evil ideology that, again, is coming from the most respected, you know, politicians, medical industries. Like, how many times have you heard there's a trans genocide going on? They're, you know, committing genocide against children because they don't let them read books about gay sex in elementary school. And I think as a collective, we got to just be done entertaining this. Of course, the problem is, in covering this for me, is this is like having to constantly reassert the gravity makes things fall, and that, you know, water is wet and the sky is blue. And so to me, like, that is almost the thing of interest is you look at, this is by the way, the attorney general, I believe, of Minnesota, the lieutenant governor, rather, current lieutenant governor of Minnesota, wearing a shirt saying protect trans kids with a knife imagery. Like, I'm literally, the people in charge of Minnesota have contributed to the radicalization of this shooter. Wearing shirts with violent implements with weapons on them, saying protect trans kids, portraying what's happening to trans kids as a life or death struggle, and providing the frame and the context for the actions like yesterday to make sense in the warped, perverted, demented minds of the children that are being indoctrinated into this by schools as a matter of policy. So we just need to stop entertaining this. Stop allowing this idea to be proliferated. Stop treating these people like what they're doing is normal at all, let alone brave or good in any possible way. Again, we'll get more into this, and we'll lay out. Yesterday I did a Moonbase Live with Lebanon John on Rumble, which I think you should go watch if you're bored later. And as a topic, we went through a bookmark folder on X that I have just called Charts, just going through the charts. And so I've pulled some select charts from yesterday's broadcast to try to illustrate the timeline of how transgenderism was adopted by increment and normalized through the hijacking of the Diagnostic Manual for Psychology, the DSM. So we'll get into that, and we'll lay out some of the timeline of how we got the scientific underpinning to lead to the tragedy we saw yesterday. And we'll get into a lot more. We'll also get into a tranche of emails that's been leaked between Jeffrey Epstein and the Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Barak. And boy, there's some interesting stuff in there, so stay tuned for that. And then we have a guest in the third hour from the New American. Very excited to talk to him as well. Let's continue today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Thursday, the 28th of August, 2025. FBI probes Minnesota school shooting as domestic terrorism and anti-Catholic hate crime. During a Wednesday morning mass at Annunciation Catholic Church in Minneapolis, a shooter killed two children and injured 17 others at 8:15 a.m. FBI Director Castro Tell said The attack is being investigated as domestic terrorism and an anti-Catholic hate crime, which is good. I mean, the FBI can spend a bunch of time and money surveilling Catholic churches themselves as if being Catholic is a source of terror. Well, when Catholic churches or Christian churches of any denomination continually come under threat of extreme violence by transgender activists, yeah, it's time they get treated as the targets for terrorism that we obviously are. Again, we'll get back to that. Armed with a rifle and shotgun and handgun, Westman, the shooter, a transgender individual in his early 20s, fired through the church side windows at children. Authorities said he died by self-inflicted gunshot wound. And then, of course, they withheld the identity for a couple hours while they could go through and destroy his social media footprint, which they did not succeed in doing. We have the videos in the manifesto showing his motivation, and it was anti-Christian, anti-American, and in line with the 764 pedophile grooming satanic cults that we've been warning about for years. Meanwhile, CDC Director Susan Monterez ousted in vaccine policy clash with RFK Jr. Four top officials quit in leadership crisis. So the CDC is having a bit of a reorganization these days. The Department of Health and Human Services announced on X late Wednesday that Susan Monterez, the first Senate-confirmed director of the CDC, is no longer the director of the CDC, as they've had some falling outs over RFK's vaccine agenda. We can get back to that as well. RFK also making some pretty interesting announcements about the source of autism and the cause of that plague on America. We'll get back to that. Again, with the shooting, Democrats rush to call for gun control in wake of tragic Catholic school shooting. Several Democrat politicians and pundits called for more gun control within hours of Wednesday's deadly Minneapolis, Minnesota Catholic school shooting, with Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley posting to X, kids should not fear going to school. Parents should not fear for their babies' lives when they kiss them goodbye. We must take action against gun violence. And it goes on and on. You've also got Republicans like Trey Gowdy, even I think Charlie Kirk, dipping their toe in the gun control messaging by, you know, talking about red flag laws. Let me just be very clear. Let me make it perfectly clear to everybody. And this is not an opinion. It is just an absolute fact that you as Democrats or gun control Republicans need to understand. It's never going to happen. You are never going to get our guns. And it's not a matter of because we're going to outvote you, because we're going to shoot you with the guns if you try. So let's just understand this, fully comprehend it. In the last 10 years, we have seen the Democratic Party in particular go absolutely insane with power and go completely mask off for their underlying and deeply held intentions when it comes to the Republicans. If it was up to you, you would put us in camps and to take our children away. You're never getting the guns. So drop it. Okay? Drop it. All right. We've seen how you treat us when we have the guns. You're never getting the guns. Get over it. Okay? Never. Never, ever, ever will you ever take our guns. So just, you can stop wasting our time by talking about it. Okay? We will shoot you if you try. Is that clear? Thank you for your attention in this matter. Trump envoy to meet Ukrainian officials expect war to be over by end of the year. Witkoff is set to try to convince Ukrainian officials to accept a Russian peace proposal. However, the meeting between Putin, Zelensky, and likely Trump is expected to be needed to officially end the war. They're hoping to end the war by the end of the year. And finally, we have this. Conor McGregor claims to have presidential nomination secured as Irish election looms. Is it time to turn around the demographic trajectory of the Emerald Isle? I think it is. More on the other side. Stay with us.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity. Focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said sure he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in
because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue, and then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at theologyshow.com, but we'll certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, theoxygenshore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, it was like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it if you're on SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexShow.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psycho. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first and then working out so hard that, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'll be like a restaurant. I'm going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is the American Journal. We got a lot to talk about today. We're going to get into transgenderism here as, things have changed a little bit. People were posting, I think Brianna Morello posted it yesterday, an image of a screenshot from Fox News where the Chiron, the lower thirds, like where it says my name right there, on Fox News, it says, trans shooter identified, something along those lines. She was saying, back in my day, back when I worked at Fox News 4 years ago, you never would have seen this headline. You never would have seen the transgender aspect of it lead first and foremost when telling the story. But you're starting to see that because the pushback to transgenderism, I think, has only just started, but it's sort of picking up steam. And every new instance of radical, horrific violence against Christian children by transgender individuals just accelerates our movement back towards sanity and eradicating the menace of so-called transgenderism. Once and for all, trans killer murders 2 children, injures 17. This is the one Brianna
posted saying, yeah, they never would have posted that just a few years ago. So the turnaround is coming because I guess as a society, it's hard to even say this because for a lot of us, yours truly, you've never tricked anything. It seems weird to be like society's going through this process where it's like, okay, some people are idiots and they fell for a lie and are now waking up to that lie. Other people thought they were being a good person by being understanding. Now they realize they were just being taken advantage of. But let's just say as a society, we're sort of going through what like a parent of a transgender kid would go through, where it's like first it's just this weird thing that you don't really expect, but you're trying to be understanding and you're trying to do what you're supposed to do. And then, you know, eventually you realize like, wait, this is all utter bullcrap and my child has been disabled permanently and severely because of the evil things being whispered in their ear by people who despise them. I think we're all sort of going through that process. And so while at first people just didn't understand it and were kind of confused and worried about hurting someone's feelings and were just trying to keep their head above water and go along with things until they could figure out exactly what was happening. Well, we figured out exactly what's happening at this point, and it's horrifying and ridiculous. And we need to stop treating it with any semblance of understanding or, you know, compromise. This is strictly a mental illness. It's tragic people have it, but it also manifests as a social contagion, as it can actually be spread through indoctrination. And again, we'll go to some of the charts that prove this timeline. Also, by the way, ahead today, we've got more background to the story of the little Scottish girl wielding the knife and the axe. We have a name now. Her name is Lola, and we have the full story of how the day unfolded. So I want to get to that in just a little bit as well. But Andy Ngo, again, I think is doing fantastic coverage on this from NoComment, NGOComment.com, talking about this Robin character who identified as female. Their parents went along with it as a minor, went and legally changed their designation. Going over some of the evidence of their state of mind through their manifesto and their YouTube videos. Another decoded section of the manifesto, which I independently verified with a Cyrillic reader, this is Andy Ngo writing, suggests Westman regretted transitioning, but feels it's too late to change. Quote, I'm sick of my hair. I want to chop it off. I only keep it because it's pretty much my last chance, my last charade of being trans. I'm tired of being trans. I wish I never brainwashed myself. I can't cut my hair off now as it would be an embarrassing defeat, and it might be a concerning change of character that could get me reported. Sticking on the manifesto journal was the Pride Progress flag, which included trans and BLM covers, colors, and a rifle and text, defend equality. This ultra-violence comes against a backdrop of years of militant trans propaganda, often amplified by Democrats and sympathetic media outlets, encouraging activists to take up arms against Christians, transphobes, and so-called fascists. And this is where I think Andy Ngo really does a great job in taking not just what we know about the trans shooter from yesterday, but putting it in context of the ongoing pattern of radicalization when it comes to transgenderism coming again from people who either want to just make hay out of this politically and, you know, have a new cause to pretend to champion to get people to vote for them, or by people that are, you know, genuinely dedicated to this sort of anti-human, anti-God, delusional worldview. In March 2023, Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, a Democrat, wore a shirt depicting a knife with the threat, protect trans kids. She wore it during a press conference celebrating Governor Tim Walz's executive order declaring Minnesota a trans refuge state. The shirt has become popular amongst radical trans activists, many of whom posed with weapons while wearing it. Democrats are outraged while progressives love this Democrats trans equality shirt. She'll replace Tim Walz as governor if Kamala Harris wins in the fall, and she already has people talking about trans kids' rights with images of, you know, trans people, I don't know, fat idiots wearing the Protect Trans Kids shirt with the rose, which is a socialist symbol. It's the icon of the Democratic Socialists of America, and the knife representing the surgery they go through to cut their balls off, I guess, maybe. Andy Ngo's also been reporting for months about the so-called Zizians, the name given to a former Bay Area based trans death cult linked to 8 brutal homicides and suicides. Its members followed a radical anarchist and woke-tinged ideology that claimed transphobes were targeting them. As a result, they stockpiled weapons and lived in box trucks. And then a lot of people died. The liberal media mostly ignored the story. By the way, if you knew any of them, their families, or their victims, please get in touch with Andy at andynomedia@gmail.com. You have the Zizians, of course, the 764 cult, which is transgender and pedophilic and satanic. At a press conference by woke Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey on Wednesday afternoon about the shooting, he gave a short speech where he condemned transphobia. Quote, I've heard about a whole lot of hate that's being directed at our trans community, he lamented, saying that those who did so had lost their sense of common humanity. Which again is just insane. It just is absolutely mind boggling that this is the case. But here we are. You could just never, ever imagine this being the case for pretty much any other example of like a member of a community or an identity goes out and commits a mass shooting, and the mayor that day is out there celebrating and offering condolences to the shooter's community and saying, yeah, you face a lot of hate, and basically we understand why you had to do this. It's like, this is completely insane. He also, you know, went on a tirade about how prayer doesn't work and we shouldn't be praying, et cetera, et cetera. The liberal media is complicit as well across the country. Sympathetic outlets have run puff pieces legitimizing paranoia amongst trans radicals who claim they must form anarchist or communist militias and arm themselves to bash back against U.S. government under President Trump. The violent imagery is widespread. Another common shirt they wear reads trans rights ... or else, accompanied by graphics of firearms. The Eugene Weekly magazine out of Oregon with a transgender person hugging a gun as the Trump administration attacks trans people. Some queer folks and are armed and ready to bash back. Yeah, they're going to kill children. So you watch out. Watch out, Trump. If you don't give them trans rights, which don't exist and aren't a thing, or if they do exist, apply to everybody. There's, what are trans rights? What are we talking about here? Are you talking about the right for trans children to have access, or trans people to have access to children? Is it the right to mutilate your own body, or is it the right to convince children to mutilate their body? Is it the right to take children away from their parents so you can provide them cross-sex hormones and destroy their physiology for the rest of their lives? What are trans rights exactly? What are they demanding? I mean, when you start talking about transgenderism, truly, like, you thought it was bad before. You thought you lived in an empire of lies before. The level of delusion that you have to get through to even wrap your mind around what these people are saying is truly incredible. I mean, the identity's a delusion. The oppression they're under is a delusion. Their ability to fight back is a delusion. Their targets are delusionary. Their identities are delusionary. I mean, it's just madness, pure, unrelenting madness on every front. And yet, for some reason, craziest part about this, you've got doctors and lawyers and politicians and editors of magazines all contributing to this delusion, all actually upholding it and facilitating this violent psychopathy. So what are we doing here? Why are they doing this? Why are they telling trans people that they are right in believing that their bodies are wrong? That's crazy. Why are they telling them that they are under threat and have to commit violence in return? That's insane. Truly insane. What are they trying to win by violence? Is somebody doing violence against them? No. They aren't. I mean, we've done the statistics before where, like, transgender people are, they'll be like, did you know 17 trans people were killed last year? And you do the numbers and you're like, all right, that's a significantly lower rate for any other demographic. It's like black guys are killed at a higher rate. White guys are killed at a higher rate. Gay guys are killed at a higher rate. It doesn't exist. It is just madness, pure illusion. It doesn't exist. The threat that they're under, the threat, I guess, that they're identifying is the threat to their rights, which again, it just does to go into a girl's locker room or to play soccer on the girls' team because you don't qualify for the boys' team. These are the only rights I can even understand, except for the surgery, I guess, and access to children to indoctrinate them into your ideology. And we've got something like 45% of Gen Z identifying as in some way non-gender confirming. Our country is in the throes of a perverted sex cult death camp, basically. So let's stop giving any credence or legitimacy to this psychotic terror. Okay, please, let's stop. Trans rights or else, with pictures of all these different guns. What does that even mean? You people are psychos. We got each other. Okay, so they're taking this is the AAV, the trans black person also. We all we got and we got each other. Death before detransition. And it usually comes after, but that's the good news, is if this really is some sort of, you know, war between transgenderism and the normies, the normals. Folks, we're going to get a 40% casualty rate with ever even picking up a gun. So that's the good news, I guess, if this is a war, if they really are true, if they're arming themselves, if it's trans versus non-trans, 40% of the trans are kind of on our side. Trans Day of Vengeance. Stop Trans Genocide. Trans Day of Vengeance. This is the trans army on Facebook. People responding, just say when. I'm sorry, it's a trans person. Just say when. Sorry, we got to mock you now. Sorry, we tried to be understanding. You started killing children. So, sorry. No, everybody tried to be really nice to you for a while. Pretend like you aren't, you know, genetic dead-end freaks. That we all have visceral, you know, evolutionarily developed disgust responses to seeing. We really tried as a culture to be understanding and permissive with all of this, but we got to stop. So that's it. Yeah, we just got to stop not being mean to these people, I think, honestly. So far, it's not working. So far, being nice just ain't working, so we got to do something. The queer people who are buying guns to prepare for Trump's America. Won't someone please think of the poor, innocent Christian transphobes that just want trans people dead? Make transphobes scared again. Trans activists on Instagram mock the children that were killed and injured. And this is, I mean, sort of the most typical part of all of this is that you have in this manifesto, in the diary of this mass murderer of children, all of these statements that are just like, why can't people just be kind? These damn Nazis, Trump and these fascists, why can't they just be kind and live or let live? As they're loading the .223 caliber bullets into the magazine for deployment on the first day of school at a Catholic preschool. It's just, these are the people that we're dealing with. So again, we got to be mean to these people. They deserve it. Okay. For their own sake and for ours, they have to be shaken out of this delusion that they're operating in. And it's a kindness, really. Because you can tell from this person's writings and videos, just utter misery, just a volcano of sadness in every possible way. They're trans, they're not trans, they want to cut their hair off, they're living in this insane paranoia because they're planning a mass shooting and they're terrified somebody's going to find out about it, and they're drawing self-portraits where their reflection is a demon demanding that they kill. Being in love with Adam Lanza, of all people. It honestly just goes on and on. And a lot of it is just, you know, internet meme culture. You can't take some of it too seriously. People are like, wait, so just so I understand, the mass shooter was trans and also a liberal, but also a racist who hated Latinos, black people, and Jews. And last but not least, also homophobic. Somebody's story isn't adding up. I mean, I'm sorry, what were you expecting? You're peering into the brain of a dysfunctional individual. Did you think there was going to be a coherent, this person shot up a mass of preschool children? Were you expecting a sophisticated ideological manifesto? You're looking in the heart of darkness. You're peering beyond the veil into chaos itself. So I don't know what you're expecting, but you get what it is. Kill Donald Trump, rip and tear, release the list. So it's an Epstein fan, right? Release the list, they say, as they open fire on a group of children. No, they just support the Epstein victims. To be honest, they're probably just jealous. They probably just, this guy probably laid in bed at night just imagining what it was like to be raped by Jeffrey Epstein. That's how you get to this mindset. Let's look at some charts, shall we? Let's go to the charts, folks. This is a chart that we were studying yesterday on the moon base. The percentage of U.S. adults identifying as trans, there's nothing natural about this. John Lefebvre on X shows this chart. And you can see that the percentage of adults identifying as trans from all the way back in, goes all the way back to 1939, and they say it hovers right around 0.4%, which, sure, less than half of 1%. Of adults have some sort of gender identity crisis, some sort of mental illness manifesting as confusion over biological sex. That makes sense to me. But then you see a very distinct and very noticeable rise starting around the mid-90s. The early to mid-90s, you saw this very distinct uptick that only increased exponentially. Now, this chart, unfortunately for us, ends in 2005. You can only imagine where this trajectory goes from there. So you go from 0.4% of the population identifying as trans for decades on end. And then come 1994 or so, you have a spike that tops out at 2005 at 3.8%. And then I'm sure, I don't know if the crew can find a chart extended, for the next 20 years, but I imagine that trend continues. And so as we were looking at this on the moon base yesterday, I just thought, I wonder what happened in 1994. Because I guess, if we're listening to the transgender narrative, what happened in 1994 must have been some sort of big wave of acceptance, right? Because the only options are either this is an unnatural condition that has somehow been injected into our society as an outside force, warping and perverting the otherwise normal function of human minds, to bring about this phenomenon of transgenderism. That's one option. That's not, what the people who push this say. What they say is that actually it's just the people are more accepting now. They're more open now. Now that transgenderism is being normalized, people that would have, repressed their feelings instead feel open to expressing them. So in their construct of the world, there were always trans people that were just oppressed by evil white supremacy and forced to, pretend to be somebody who they weren't. So I guess in 1994, we must have finally grown to accept the reality that everybody's in the wrong body. And we just started recognizing that. Like, it's completely absurd. What actually happened was in 1994, they redefined transgenderism for the DSM. And then they did it again, I believe, in 2013. Talked about this before, and I won't go off on it again, but you do need to understand that the real big change was the change from body dysmorphia to gender dysphoria, because label gender dysphoria made it to where it's a mental illness, it's a sickness, so you can get medical treatment for it, but it means the physical body's wrong, not the mind. It seems nuanced, but it's very important. You change these definitions in the DSM, then any child, any young person with any sort of mental illness that goes to the therapist or goes to a school counselor or goes to a psychiatrist is going to be asked, well, maybe this is gender identity disorder. Maybe that's what's causing these feelings. And they'll actually be led down that path, thinking, well, that sounds right. Maybe that is what it is. Maybe I'll think about that more. Maybe I'll try it out a little bit. Maybe I feel a little bit different when I wear different clothes. And you just seduce them into believing that this is the case. Again, because anybody with a mental illness will be told to go to a psychiatrist or a therapist, and every psychiatrist and therapist, you know, gets their marching orders and their professional guidelines from the DSM that is now telling them this is a good thing and important and, you know, a valid medical diagnosis. Here's your trajectory 2017 through 2021. And you see Generation Z goes from 10% to 20%, a doubling in 5 years of the percentage of trans identification by generation. So, again, absolutely skyrocket. So in 1994, just so happened to be the year that the DSM-4 was published, in which the term transsexualism was replaced with gender identity disorder to reduce stigma. GID described a persistent and strong cross-gender identification coupled with persistent discomfort with one's assigned sex or a sense of inappropriateness in that sex's gender role. So DSM-4 not only categorized GID into childhood, adolescent, and adult forms, but also the not otherwise specified category for those who didn't fully meet the criteria. And so it went from being, you know, transvestitism as sort of a fetish, trans meaning a cross, vestite referring to clothes, basically meaning you are wearing the wrong type of clothes. Transvestite, transsexual or transgender is where you take biological sex and say it's different than the way gender is perceived in different cultures. And it's all just nonsense, therapy talk, jargon, rhetoric to hide what is an obvious reality. There are people with mental illnesses, people not comfortable or healthy in their own body, and they're looking for an outlet for why that's good and why they're not wrong and why there's actually nothing wrong with them. It's their body that's wrong. It's God that's their enemy, not themselves. And again, we'll look into more about this. Understand the explosion in transgenderism corresponded directly to the adoption of transgenderism in the DSM and as a diagnostic tool for mental illness. And it is clearly and has been scientifically proven to be a social contagion, just like the violence that is now being carried out by members of this community, being radicalized into this state of delusion and then being told that they have to commit violence to justify or secure their existence. Folks, we're going to be back on the other side to talk more about this, about the Jeffrey Epstein emails with Ehud Barak and Peter Thiel. And we'll talk about the, you know, behind the story or behind the scenes full story of Lola, the Scottish queen who defended her sister with an axe and a knife. And a lot more to come in today's episode of American Journal. Bill Jasper joining us in the third hour from The New American. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support everything that we do here. Thealexjonesstore.com. Irish Sea Moss, buy two, get one free, on sale right now. Thealexjonesstore.com.
Oh, here it is. Bovine Colostrum Plus. This is what I was looking for. This is the only thing that works on a monstrous stomach like mine. If it works for me, it will work for you. Order yours at the website below.
Charging into a goblin's nest. Goblin vomit.
Secret shoreline mission to handpick nature's vitamin-packed sea moss before the globalists patent it. He's scooping it up like it's Cyber Monday in the supplement aisle. But suddenly, A 20-foot-tall sea moss mutant erupts from the tide pool like Godzilla. Alex dashes like he just saw a new Fauci vaccine. Will he make it or become the monster's meal? To be continued.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. We're going to finish up our coverage of the transgender shooter here because we got a lot more to talk about. Some very interesting stories to get into, but I want to go now to clip number 11. This is Robbie Starbuck talking to John Stossel about transgenderism, and John Stossel sort of taking the, I'll say, the devil's advocate position, but sort of playing the role of the normie that doesn't really understand the full depths of social engineering that's behind transgenderism, that's still sort of operating under the assumption that this is a real thing, that it's a real expression of mental discomfort that should be, you know, coddled and taken seriously because you, you know, respect the human who's going through this process. They don't understand that this is an attack on humanity and has to be defended against at all costs. And John Stossel sort of taking that position as he asked this question. Let's watch.
Aren't there some people who genuinely feel like they're born in the wrong body? I know people who've had the surgery and they seem happier.
So certainly people have existed that believe they're the other sex, and they're not, but they believe that. And we've diagnosed that for a very long time through the DSM-5, which, you know, is where they put all of the definitions of mental illnesses. It's defined as a mental illness, and it has been for a very long time. That doesn't mean that there aren't people who believe this. They certainly believe it. There's also schizophrenics who believe that they're Batman, who believe that they can fly off of the top of the Empire State Building. Like, there's people who believe all kinds of things. It doesn't make it true. You know, and so that's my contention, is they can believe it all day long. You know, that's fine. It doesn't make it the truth, though. And I'm not going to pretend to affirm something that's not true. And it would be no kinder of me to affirm that they believe they are this thing that they can truly never be than it would be for me to tell the schizophrenic person that, yeah, in fact, you can fly off the Empire State Building. I would be doing a disservice by pretending that every delusion is actually, in fact, real just because it might make somebody happy. Just because it might make somebody happy doesn't mean it's not harmful to other people or to themselves.
But it does make some people happy.
Sure. And if you're an adult and you make a set of decisions I disagree with, that's your prerogative. Knock yourself out. But once you cross a line and you start doing this to children who don't have informed consent, they don't understand what they're actually doing and what they're signing up for, I think there's no forgiveness. And I think that you're an awful, awful human being if you're anywhere near or involved with the concept of doing this to children. And especially at this point, because the information's out there now. The information is there for people to understand the level of abuse that has occurred against a lot of these kids and how many detransitioners have come out to explain just how crooked this industry is. There are so many kids out there who will tell you that they got their hormones, they got their puberty blockers, they got their double mastectomy approved without ever even being checked for mental illness, without ever being sat down and really being talked through in terms of the things going on in their life, being asked, hey, are you the victim of sexual abuse? You know, how's your home life? These questions aren't being asked to a bunch of these kids. It's just straight to, no, we have to affirm transition, because that's what the woke ideology demands. It demands you always affirm. In fact, you can lose your parental rights if you don't affirm. We have a mom in the film who lost her parental rights because she refused to affirm the gender identity of her daughter.
When CPS came to remove your daughter, will you walk us through that process?
Oh my gosh, I was crying. And then what should I do? And they send it to a group home. I couldn't go visit after court. It was her new home now. CPS, the people who work there, the group home, trying to convince me that what my daughter needs is going to the transition, and I have to respect her.
And in the state's care, the daughter committed suicide, jumped in front of a train. It is the hardest interview I've done in my life talking to that mom, because she tried to save her kid. She tried. The state would not let her save her child.
Just absolutely insane. Of course, we've pointed out a million times, and stories are constantly being covered and broken, and there are new developments constantly on the idea that they're banning conversion therapy because essentially they want to be able to indoctrinate your kid without resistance. So what they consider conversion therapy is only one direction. It's only if you try to tell a kid that they're not trans. You say, look, you're going through some changes in your life. You're probably feeling uncomfortable. You're looking for, you know, something to cling on to. This identity is being presented to you. People are treating you differently when you take it on, but it's not really who you are. You'll get over that. Like, if you try to coach a kid through a period of, mental unrest, they say that's conversion therapy and it's illegal. It's basically the equivalent of, you know, attaching a car battery to a gay kid and shocking them every time they have gay thoughts, right? It's like, it's basically electrotherapy. I mean, we think conversion therapy, that's what you picture, isn't it? Is Mike Pence strapping some 12-year-old boy to a car battery. I'm like, are you gay? Like, no, it's literally just like if you
tell them, hey, you could be trans, but you're probably not. This is probably just a phase. That's considered conversion therapy, and they're writing laws to make that illegal while they simultaneously unroll the red carpet for transgenders to come in and coach your children that they should or already are transgender, and to hide it from you, and to come in during recess to get special teaching. That's not conversion therapy, according to them. That's not what's being made illegal. Just resisting it is.
Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at theolivestore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try ultramethylene blue, exclusively available at theolivestore.com.
Tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, folks, we really do have a lot of other news to get to, so I'm going to try to finish up with the old trans shooter here. But, yeah, I feel a bit of a responsibility as we are InfoWars. We are the, cutting edge. We sort of have to go farther than everybody else to lead the way. And while other people will be talking about transgenderism, I really think just as a culture, we need to just stop coddling this, just treat it as it is. It's a mental illness. And, we were talking about it on Moonbase yesterday when we showed the chart showing that rise, that and the chart ended at 2005, and already it was, peaking and, eight times as high as the normal average all achieved within, under 10 years. And we were just shocked at that because in 2005, nobody knew a trans person. Like, did you know a trans person in 2005? I know I didn't, because I very distinctly remember moving to Austin in around 2011, I think it was, 2010. I moved to Austin, and there was a transgender dude that worked at a gas station on the east side, MLK and Chacon or something. And it was like, he was like the transgender guy. Like, everybody knew who this guy was in the neighborhood. If you went to that gas station, it was like, yeah, did you see the guy with the long
nose? No, it was the Shell station, and it was MLK. And I know exactly what you're talking about, because I had a bad day one time and I walked into this gas station. I've told this story on air before, and I look up as I'm about to check out, and this trans person told me to smile, honey. It could be worse. And I had a revelation.
It was like a character.
And not only that, it was the dude dressed in full drag.
Uh-huh.
Like Adam's apple, makeup,
black hair,
everything.
Black long nails.
Dude, you are one. Yes. Same encounter.
Yep.
And then he blew me.
He worked there for years, and he was like,
just kidding.
He was like the trans guy. Like, everybody knew him as the trans. Like, it wasn't normalized. It wasn't something that there were a lot. There was like one guy that everybody knew.
One guy.
Yeah. And then, because it genuinely wasn't a thing back then. I mean, and of course, this is Austin. Keep Austin weird. Austin's full of weirdos anyway. And like, even back then, it was just like, yeah, a guy dressed like a woman, Okay. Yeah. Austin's weird. You got a bunch of weirdos. There's a guy that walks around pretending to be blind too, to trick people to giving him rides. I'm sure we all have stories with that guy. Yeah, there's weirdos. There's the guy Leslie. Alex has done hours on Leslie before. If you want to know the truth about Leslie, go check out some old Alex Jones clips about this guy. Because he was like an Austin celebrity. He was a homeless guy who was a cross-dresser. But nobody was like, oh, that's a trans-identified male-to-female pre-op transitioner. It's like, no, oh, that's the guy that rides around with a Speedo. That's the homeless guy that keeps Austin very weird for all of us. So even the point being that, like, the move towards normalizing transgenderism had already started by the mid-90s. By 2005, it was, you know, eight times as high as it had been average for the last 100 years before that. But, like, I know that by 2011, 2012, you had to go to, like, the weird part of a weird city to even see one transgender person, and they were so unique and rare that, like, everybody you would talk to would know, oh, that's the gas station with the transgender guy that works there. It's like, it was the only one. So it is, again, just completely insane that now, 15 years after that, it's like we're supposed to treat it as, like, completely normal and totally acceptable. And, like, how did they normalize this so quickly? And they did it through, you know, hijacking the medical industry and then, you know, running a media narrative campaign. Somebody somewhere decided we're normalizing this because we hate God. You know, let's do it. And then so they've done it. It is bonkers. So I got some things to add to this.
Don't forget Bruce Jenner.
Oh, Bruce Jenner was a major normalizing effect. There's some very funny videos about people talking about Bruce Jenner. I want to say it's like Tim Dillon, I think, has a bit where he invited... look up Tim Dillon Friendsgiving Bruce Jenner. And he talks about Bruce Jenner coming to his Thanksgiving party. And now... He just wasn't a woman, like, didn't act like a woman at all. It was just like, how you doing, brother? it's a very funny rendition from Tim Dillon. So yeah, Bruce Jenner, that was a major coordinated, you know, media grift to sell that. Let's just take a look, overview quickly of what else we know about this transgender shooter from yesterday. From Harrison Crank on X, this is more than mental illness. This is demonic possession with that still frame that we were showing you earlier of the self-portrait with the demon in the mirror. And the translation has the conversation going like this. Who? When will this end? Help me. I don't want to. Help. Kill yourself. Kill. Okay, this person was, like, actually in conversations with demons. I mean, some people fake it. This person seems to be expressing something very real and legitimate in their mental illness. Something they believe to be true. From Sovereign Bra, the trans shooter drew a picture of himself as Baphomet and described demonic forces controlling him in his journal. This is what trans ideology does. The kid quite literally became possessed by demons. Here we have the page 2 from their journal here. I feel like there's some kind of God or higher force controlling me. I sometimes notice how I suddenly start writing things that I don't even think of myself. It's as if somebody is putting these thoughts in my head. I used to think that all of this was nonsense, but now I'm not so sure. Maybe this really is some kind of higher mind that communicates with me this way. It's like, man, do you know how dumb you have to be? Maybe it's God. Jesus was like, kill children. They're like, is that you, God? It's like, I kill children, cut your dick off. Maybe this is a higher power. Maybe I'm chosen for something. Hate your parents, kill your children, hate God. Yeah. No, you're being touched by a higher power. Certainly, that's definitely what it is. I often notice how my body does things automatically as if by itself. Like your heart beating. Isn't that crazy how your body does things without you controlling? It's almost like your body is not yours. It's almost like it's just an impermanent vessel for your soul. Isn't that crazy how that works? So you're not actually in control of your body. Your body is actually something different than you yourself because you can't even consciously control aspects of your body, let alone the world around you. So you're just sort of an incorporeal spirit trapped momentarily in a physical manifestation that you have no control over. Isn't that nuts? Should cut your dick off. It scares me, but at the same time, it makes me curious. Perhaps people are all controlled like this, but they don't notice it. Maybe I'm the only one who's noticed it, and that's why I feel special. But I don't know if that's good or bad. Okay, it's bad. No, I'll tell you right now, it's bad. It's the type of thoughts that led to you murdering preschool children at church. So it's bad. That's a bad mindset to have, buddy. God dang. Again, like it. The only real problem we're dealing with here is this person wasn't thrown in an asylum earlier. Did anybody bother reading their journals at any point? Maybe look after your kid if he's clearly possessed by demons? We have the translation of the journal. Again, it's the rambling of a psychotic. But then you've got the other aspect to this. Now, this happens a lot where you don't extrapolate from one individual to an entire group typically. You see a black guy steal a car, you're not like, black people steal cars, right? It's like, no, it's an individual doing an individual thing. Or if you see a video of, like, you know, black people beating up white people, it's like, well, thugs, they're scum, but you don't extrapolate that. Then you go online and you see that the video beating up the white people has like 10,000 comments that all say, yeah, get those crackers. You know, that's what they get. They deserve it. And every one of those posts has like 100,000 likes. And you go, okay, should I be worried? Is this actually something that's demographic wide? I mean, is there a wider thing here? It's, you know, same thing with like Israel and Jews. It's like Israel bombs a place. You're like, wow, that's so evil. I can't believe it. What a bad country. And then it's like you've got Jews in America being like, how dare you? You're anti-Semitic. And you go like, well, I wasn't extrapolating Israel's actions to everybody, but now you're defending Israel's actions. So what am I supposed to, how am I supposed to take that? I don't attribute to a group the actions of an individual, but then when hundreds of thousands of them are all supporting the actions of the individual, now we're kind of in some uncharted territory. Now maybe we have to worry about this. Same thing. A transgender person shoots up a school. Obviously, that doesn't mean every transgender person is going to shoot up a school. But then you go to the Reddit comments. And you realize the problem that you really have. You realize that the true scope of the seething hatred of innocence and purity and goodness that, you know, boils in the dark heart of these people, are on Reddit. From Reddit underscore lies, holy crap, Reddit. These are some of the responses to the news about the killing of little children at a Catholic school. Based, take the fight to their kids so they can feel what it's like to be attacked for your identity. Yeah, because when, because again, to these people, to these insane psychotics, you know, excuse me, ma'am, is basically the equivalent of, you know, your child never coming home from the first day of school. Like, they see that as the same. This is the radicalization. Again, we see it everywhere. It's sort of a ubiquitous thing. And in the constant cycle that we always talk about where it's like, well, we're attacking you because you're attacking us. It's not that we're attacking you. It's that we're defending ourselves. It's like, from what? From what exactly? What are you defending yourselves from? Again, what are the trans rights you don't have? Are people hunting you? No. People just say, sir, because you're a man, even though you're wearing a dress. And you're like, wow, I better kill their children. That's equivalent. That's totally fair. I don't even know why we're even having this conversation. It's just, you know, long story short, these people are psychotics and have to be dealt with one way or another. Elect a fascist. Your kids are legitimate targets. Republicans are enemies of humanity, and thinning the herd is our duty. More dead Christians, lol. To me, it seems like if you elect a really bad guy that's cruel to people and weaponize his cruelness and horrific behavior against your neighbors, some of those horrible, right, they're basically saying, well, you voted, somebody somewhere voted for Donald Trump, therefore I'm going to kill children and it's justified. Great. Maybe their Christo-fascist parents will think twice before supporting an administration that kills Palestinian children. Yeah, wrap your mind around that one. You know, these people care so much about children being killed that they're going to kill children. It's like not even a rare mindset in today's world. It's like, it's just crazy. Yeah. Maybe their Christo-fascist parents will think twice before supporting an administration that kills Palestinian children. So there you go. Conservatives want to kill all trans. Shouldn't be surprised when we fight back. Heroic. They want to kill our kids. We are going to fight back. This is Republicans' fault for trying to genocide us. Am I supposed to feel bad that rich Christian kids are gone? Good riddance. The trans community will not die laying down without a fight. 40% suicide rate. There's a 40% rate of suicide in the trans community. There's a 40% rate of suicide in the trans community. We don't have to do anything. We're not going to take it lying down. No, usually take it flinging yourself from a bridge. Do us all a favor. Tell you what, if you're debating whether between shooting up a Catholic school or just ending yourself in anonymity and disgrace, do the latter. Just do the second thing. Please kill yourself, not children. I hope the guns are okay. Future religious extremists dying is not a bad thing. See, again, it's very weird because they are like pro-Palestinian, but they love using Israeli logic. That's what we call Israeli logic. That the little children they're killing were just future religious extremists. So, I mean, they were terrorists. Get them while they're young. It's hard to believe this could happen at a Catholic mass. Hart told NBC News, why is it hard to believe? Is it because you thought your imaginary sky daddy would protect you from the decisions the politicians you elect make? It's not hard to believe at all. You just wish your made-up BS worked instead of actually doing anything about it. Yeah, I mean, if you didn't believe in Satan before, ta-da. I mean, there it is. There it is, folks. Raw Egg Nationalist at BabyGravy9. Reddit really is one of the great anthropological tools in the modern age. Limitless wealth of human data at your fingertips. This is somebody saying, I worked with the shooter until just a few weeks ago. In this case, I made a complete loss for what could have been done. He was so nice and normal, never acted weird. He was just a friendly kid. Somebody responds to him. The shooter identified as a she. She changed her name and sex in 2020. Maybe you misgendering her contributed. Ever think about that? Maybe it's your fault all the kids are dead. Because you didn't play into the delusion of the mass murderer that killed all of the children. Great. All right, we don't need to go over. There is this, though. This chart's been going around. Mass shooting rates by demographic, 2015 through 2025. Public incidents with four or more fatalities expressed as rates per million population. And as you see, when rated by demographic, the lowest instance of mass shooting is by Native Americans, who have no instances of a single mass shooting taking place between 2015 and 2025. Hispanics have the second lowest at 0.047. Whites are mid-range at 0.088. Black is 0.099, slightly higher than white. Asian, despite being a very low number of mass shooting, you know, people committing mass shootings, their numbers as population are so small, they're actually overrepresented in mass shootings compared to other demographics, with Asians being 0.253, that is their rate of mass shootings. But then you get trans / non-binary at 0.718. Since most of them are white, I think that's the one we can compare it to. So that is a good 10 times as high, going from 0.088 to 0.718 in terms of rates by demographic groups. So I think we can compromise on gun control. I think I have a compromise on gun control with the Democrats. Gun control for trans people. I was joking about this on Moonbase too, except with black people. Because I, as facetious as the argument is, I think it's very funny. I actually want to deploy it against leftists where you show like the rate of shooting crimes by race, and you see that black people are overrepresented, and you say, I think we should have gun control with black people. You want total gun control. You want gun control to be total and nobody to have guns. I want everybody to have guns. Let's compromise. Let's meet in the middle. No guns for black people. Because not only are you going to get rid of the largest source of gun crime, which you want, right? You're trying to lower gun crime. Go out, you know, why don't you target the most prolific creators of that gun crime? And what's the argument against that exactly? Oh, well, you just want to disarm black people so they're, you know, not able to defend themselves. Oh, is that what happens when you take guns from people? Huh. Fascinating, isn't it? I mean, what's the argument? If gun control is good, if it's a good thing for a population to be stripped of their guns, as the gun controllers keep telling us, wouldn't that be good for black people to not have access to guns? I mean, wouldn't that be a benefit for them? Wouldn't that make them the enlightened, you know, progressive population showing the rest of us, you know, how wonderful it is? What's the problem? What's the issue? Unless you're suggesting that, you know, taking guns from a population of people would be something that somebody who hated that population and wanted to destroy that population would do. But I don't think you want to make that argument. So I think what's the argument?
It sounds like you're going to create like an artificial black market.
Oh, well. No, well, no. We're told by the gun controllers that confiscation works. I mean, if you're promoting gun control, that means you genuinely think you can get guns off the street. So how about black people? How about no guns for black people, no guns for trans people? Okay. It's a compromise. We're giving you what you want, gun control, but we're still retaining gun control for certain populations, like as a punishment, right? Obviously, guns are so evil. They're so bad. You know, let the white people have them. Let them suffer under the Second Amendment and let the black people be free from that and accept the glory and progressiveness of gun control. What's the argument against it, liberals? Would you want to do that or not? Yeah, probably not, right? No, you probably wouldn't want that, would you? You'd probably recognize all of a sudden. Suddenly, you would realize that depriving a population of their right to defend themselves is, in fact, a curtailment of their overall liberty and something that they don't deserve and would put them in danger. So I think that's the argument we need to be having when it comes to gun control. And, you know, again, just cataloging the insane responses to the shooting. With a suicide note transcribed. I think that's just about all we're going to learn from transgender folks. So let's expand out a little bit and look at some more charts, shall we? Not about transgenderism, but about mental health overall. Young Western women became 20 to 50% more liberal and 20 to 50% more suicidal around the same time. Sorry, guys, I'm going to be jumping around on these charts. A wide ideological gap is opening up between young men and women in countries across the world. This is political ideology of 18 through 29s. And you can see that while there has been an uptick, I'm sorry, so this is liberal at the top. So it's confusing because they swap the red and blue. Typically, we have blue as liberal. But they're showing liberal is up and conservative is down with zero in the middle as being, you know, average centrist. Women have gone up, men have gone down. So women have become more liberal, men have become more conservative. And you see that across the board in the U.S., South Korea, Germany, and the U.K. And you have females massively, the rate of suicide massively rising. And the younger you are, the more dramatic the rise. So pretty much perfectly correlated, perfectly, you know, dependent, independent variables aligning with one another, where as young women become more leftist, they become more suicidal, more depressed, less certain, less confident, less capable of handling just, you know, basic vicissitudes of life. Liberal women, least likely to be completely satisfied with life. Percentage of women report being completely satisfied with life, ages 18 through 40, only 12% of liberals and 37% of conservative women say they're satisfied with life. Liberal women are also the most likely to feel lonely often. This is the percentage of women who report feeling lonely a few times a week or more, ages 18 through 40. Liberals, nearly 30% of liberal women say they feel lonely often, while only 11% of conservatives do. And so what you have to ask is, all right, are these people lonely, depressed, suicidal because they're liberal, or are they liberal because they're lonely, depressed, and suicidal? And what is the effect when you have this correlation, when you have this linkage between liberalism and suicidality? What happens when you have a massive movement towards liberalism being enforced by the media and education and politics in your country? What happens is you get a less happy, less fulfilled, less capable populace who, again, can't handle the basic vicissitudes of daily life. Instead, drug themselves into senselessness or lash out in violence against people they perceive as enemies.
The last 5 years, I've had all these scientists on promoting spike protein detoxes that have saved so many people and done all this. And finally, we're like, hey, we better do our own. Let's make the best. We take the two best-selling ones, combine the two with stuff that the government tried to ban so people would die. And yeah, we're selling stuff that really works. Tell us about Ultimate Life Force. It's a horse pill. I take it a few times a year as a detox. so good for cardiovascular. Just one of the ingredients in this alone is on record a game changer they tried to ban.
Right.
This is so important.
N-acetylcysteine, better known as NAC, was widely available pre-pandemic, but during the pandemic, during COVID, they took it off Amazon because it was too powerful. Too many people were getting well from it. They say, okay, this isn't a supplement. This is a drug. Now, we're not making that claim. This is a supplement, but it is a supplement that is so powerful it could be used and compared to something like that.
And what is NAC?
N-acetylcysteine is the main precursor to your body's master antioxidant, glutathione, right? Glutathione is what your body uses to detoxify everything. But most importantly, your lungs. NAC reduces lung mucus and is incredibly powerful. This is rocket fuel. This is the gasoline. This is the fuel you need to make the glutathione. But more importantly, even than that almost, I was taking a look at Ultimate Life Force, and I forget about these things. These things are something that they wanted to ban even more than natokinase and the serapeptase. Those are compounds that go in and break down blood clots and scar tissue and inorganic things in the body. That's for the spike protein. The cool thing is everybody, every human can get healthy. It just takes different specific steps to get healthy. And that's why becoming knowledgeable about...
Well, that's like breeds of cows. They're like, these cows can handle the heat. These cows can't. These cows can handle cold. They can't. These dogs can handle this. These can't. We're all dogs. We're all cows. We're all the same species, but there's certain things each group can't handle.
No, 100%. I agree with that. And it's so key. I mean, the reason why Methylene Blue has just been such an incredible hit to the audience and to the supporters, listeners, to us, everyone, is because, well, like, we really feel the effect, you know?
It's like the Garden of Eden. God made all these things to work together.
It's all there. The information's readily
available. No, it's absolutely incredible. These are great products. They fund the operation. And, folks, it's common sense. Go get them. TheAlexShowStore.com. Get the bovine colostrum, get the methyl drive, get the power plant, get the methylene blue, get it all.
What's cool about supplements, at least to me, is you're able to look at these different genetic groups, and then you can go, okay, they need help with this one thing, we got a compound for that.
All we did was go out with the top selling products for all the studies and just combine them together.
100%. And I mean, you look at this product, the NAC alone makes it worth buying, but you've got four or five other things in there directly targeted to addressing COVID and long COVID.
People say, well, I don't have COVID right now. The point is, it's good for you, period.
100%. We've all got scar tissue in us. We've all got issues. We've all got these inorganic compounds, these microplastics. We look at something like Ultimate Life Force, it might be able to address some of those situations. You look at this, you look at the other products we're offering you, it's kind of hard to do an individual pitch for them because they're all so amazing. It's incredible. We make this stuff for you and for ourselves. Everyone at the InfoWars office is gobbling these supplements left and right. That's why I made these, is so I could take them.
And then you designed it to go with our Ultra Methylene Blue.
Absolutely. That's the key. Before any, like, man or woman, young and old, if you're on Methylene Blue, you got to take it.
Everybody loves the formulas, and I've noticed if I take both together, the energy is totally insane. Each one is very strong on its own.
Methyl Drive is something that every person in the country should take. This is something so powerful they tried to ban it.
So the Methylene Blue is like the engine and gasoline. These products together is the nitrous oxide.
Exactly. It turbocharges.
Conversation into the caller's hand. You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. We're going to be joined by Bill Jasper in studio from the New American in the next hour. So I got a lot to cover in this next segment. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, take advantage of our great sales, getting the chance to win the great Jeep Gladiator. Right now, the newest sale, I believe, is buy two Irish sea moss gummies and get one free, which is a great deal. Stock up now. Ultimate Sea Moss Gummies, one of my favorite products from the Alex Jones Store. Now on sale. Buy two, get one free. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Now, I'm a little bit confused by what I'm reading here, so I'm going to see if I can't justify these two different stories. Basically, you have people, activists on X, who reached out to and eventually got in contact with the parents of the little girl
in Scotland brandishing the knife and axe against the migrants. And they got the full story, the background of what actually happened, the name of the little girl, and a GoFundMe has now been set up for her. The person who is putting all this together is at ANC underscore aesthetics on X, at ANC underscore aesthetics, and you can find links to the GoFundMe and stuff on his page. But he says this, I spoke with the mom of one of the girls, Maya, and got the whole story that the media is covering up and lying about. So first of all, the reporting got the names of the girls mixed up. There were three girls who were there who were accosted and attacked by the migrants. Lola. Lola is the hero from the video. She's the one with the axe defending her sister from the migrant attackers. Ruby is Lola's older sister who was attacked and hospitalized. Maya is Ruby's best friend who was with them and went to call the police after Ruby was attacked by the migrants. Here's a summary of what happened from Maya's mother. Yes, so what happened was the girls were out just walking and the man in the picture made comments to Lola, the younger girl, calling her sexy and other sexual remarks when the girls started to tell this man to leave them alone and stop following them and making sexual remarks to them. After that, the man's sister, also in the picture, came around the corner and physically attacked Ruby, the older sister. She grabbed her hair, dragged her to the floor, started to punch her. Then both the man and the woman were kicking her in the head while she was on the floor. At this point, my daughter, Maya, called the police, so my daughter's account after that is all a bit blurry. But that is when Lola had the weapon. She pulled them out to protect Ruby. After that, the man came back at Lola, recording her, making sure she showed the weapons to the camera and antagonizing her. Ruby was hospitalized after the attack with severe concussion and a tennis ball-sized lump on the back of her head, as well as a lot of bruises. So that's the story, apparently, according to people who claimed to be in contact with the parents, and I have no reason to disbelieve this guy. Aesthetica, again, at ANC underscore aesthetics. I'm working with him to get a Give, Send, Go set up. We'll report back when it's live. In the meantime, if you don't want to wait, we set up a coin that generates royalties when we use it to make a donation to the family. And the Give, Send, Go is live at Justice for Lola and Ruby on Give, Send, Go. So that, again, is another sort of confirmation, I think. I mean, if you're raising money on the basis of this story and it's not true, then you're committing fraud right out in the open. So it'd be pretty weird of him to tell the story, create a GoFundMe, and start collecting money if it wasn't true. He'd just be caught for fraud immediately. So that didn't make any sense. So you read that story, you get the background. It's worse than we even thought. We'd had some of the details but hadn't heard it laid out in that timeline. So then I see a story from the Daily Mail that says the truth about the migrant Dundee schoolgirl, the migrant who a Dundee schoolgirl brandished a knife at. And so I'm like, oh, okay, good. The Daily Mail picked up the story. I mean, they're usually pretty good. I mean, they can be good, they can be bad, but, you know, typically they'll tell the stories that other mainstream media outlets won't. So I printed out the story just having read this headline, assuming that, okay, somebody from the Daily Mail saw, you know, the conversation from the statement from the mother and wrote an article giving the background. But apparently that's not what's happening, because I go to look at the article just now, knowing the truth as laid out by the family members of the little girl. And the Daily Mail's article is actually claiming that this is all a lie. So it says, revealed the truth about the migrant who a Dundee schoolgirl brandished a knife at and how wrong rabble-rousers Elon Musk and Tommy Robinson were. The ugly video clip from a Dundee housing estate in which a schoolgirl brandished a knife and an axe soon went viral, with rabble-rousers such as Elon Musk and Tommy Robinson pitching in to claim the man filming the exchange was a, quote, migrant. Others lauded the girl as a Braveheart figure, defending her homeland from a predatory alien, with comparisons quickly cited about the Asian grooming gang scandals of Rotherham and Rochdale. Yeah, I think that's what came to mind. Yes, exactly. Okay. We can now reveal the man being threatened is a family man. Yeah, we know his sister put another girl in the hospital. They're all in it together. Who's been living in the UK for 4 years and who was accompanied by his wife on the way to the shops when the incident occurred. So what's the contention here? What's the issue? So he's been in the UK for 4 years. He's a migrant. And he was just walking to the shop when a rabid 12-year-old attacked him out of nowhere with a knife and axe. Bull crap. Total bull crap. We don't know exactly what happened right before the video started filming. Fact is, first of all, the guy is still chasing the girls with the camera. He's clearly not scared of the knife and axe. He is, you know, if he was, he would stay 20, 30 feet away from him. No, he closes the gap. He closes the distance, shoving the camera in the girl's face. So what are they trying to do? What is Daily Mail trying to do here? Trying to make it seem like what we can see on camera wasn't actually happening. Don't believe the evidence of your eyes. Don't believe the foreign man with the accent filming the little girl yelling, "Don't touch my sister, get away from her." That was all just a big misunderstanding, and he was just on his way to volunteer. He was on the way to a church group when he was assaulted by these rabid little girls. I mean, come on. We can now reveal the man being threatened is a family man. Well, so were all the rapists, so I don't know what that has to do with anything. He was accompanied by his wife on the way to the shops when the incident occurred. Far from being a fresh off a cross-channel small inflatable, as implied by Musk and Robinson, which I don't think they implied any sort of timeline. I'm sorry, is there a deadline to when we're allowed to care about migrants coming into a country and assaulting the natives there? They've been there for 4 years, so now it's fine that they attack the native girls? Like, what's the argument exactly? He didn't just get off the boat. He got off the boat a year ago. Okay? And, again, what is the point of this? The self-styled digital creator took the chance to have his own say on the bust-up which launched 1,000 memes and which also led to the girl being charged by police. Speaking from his home in Dundee, Mr. Dumana, far from being fresh off the boat, Fatos Ali Dumana, 21, said he came to Britain legally from Bulgaria and he and his wife have an 8-month-old baby. Okay, so what we're learning is it's not necessarily just people from the Middle East. It's not necessarily just the new arrivals. It's not necessarily just the single men. And this is not necessarily the Asians and the Pakistanis. So maybe you just get rid of all migrants. I mean, what are you trying to prove here? Yeah, the man's name is Fatos Ali Dumana. So he may have come from Bulgaria. But they're trying to act like somehow this was all being misconveyed in X. But none of this changes anything about what we thought the situation was. Speaking from his home in Dundee, Mr. Dumana insisted he did nothing wrong and is in the country legitimately. Well, I'm sure he did. I've seen the social media and it's blown up. In the video, she's saying, "Don't touch my sister. She's only 12. And he's like, I don't understand. I just filmed myself antagonizing a 12-year-old girl who in sheer desperation was, you know, waving sharp implements at me, begging me to leave her alone. What'd I do? Why? I just assaulted, physically intimidated a preteen girl in an effort to destroy her life as a foreigner visiting this country. Why is everybody mad? Oh my God. The girl 12 was filmed brandishing a knife and what appeared to be an axe in the footage. Okay, so where's the debunking? Where were they wrong about anything? In the video, the girl wearing torn jeans and a navy t-shirt is being kept away from Mr. Dumana by another young female claiming to be her sister. "I never touched her. I didn't hit her. I swear on my life I have a baby now. I would never hurt someone," is what Dumana said. "If she's only 12, why is she messing with me and having weapons?" Because you're running at her and threatening her and intimidating her. It's like, "Oh, I'm just a father. I just have a baby." Can you imagine? Again, this is why I was saying yesterday when I was going, it's not about, imagine if it was the other way around. Like, genuinely empathize with this guy. Try to empathize with this guy. Try to put yourself in the mindset of a person who does this, who gets out his camera and starts going, "Oh, show me the knife. Show me the knife." And the little girl's like backing away and he's just like running up to her. "No, show me the knife. Show me the knife. I'm a victim. I'm going to get you thrown in jail." And later he's just like, "I don't understand what I did wrong." And it's just like, these are the people that are coming into your country, Britain. Like, imagine that. Imagine being the type of person that would play victim after all of this. It's really sickening stuff. If I was going to the shop and she was stopping me going on my way, if I did hurt the girl, why didn't the police arrest me? They have done nothing to me. They saw from the CCTV cameras from Farm Foods that she was stopping me go on my way to the shop. There was one more person who told them the police she was attacking me and called me an effing migrant. I'm not an illegal migrant. I've not done anything. But you're a migrant. Legal, illegal, you're a migrant. I mean, there is no differentiation at this point. He moved to Dundee in June 2021 and now lives on a council property with his wife, Fatos Yulianova, 19. Just a couple of minutes walk from where Saturday's incident took place. This guy was given a provisional driver's license in the UK. He's, I guess, supposedly a illegal immigrant, but he's living on state funds at the council house. Police sources have also confirmed there's no evidence to support the online rumors that Mr. Dumana is an illegal. Okay, so literally all they're saying is that he's legal, not illegal. It genuinely doesn't matter. He started working at an Indian and Thai restaurant, Tulsi, in St. Andrews a couple of months after arriving in Scotland. The young father, who wears a large cross tattoo on his neck, says he also studied to learn English at the College, Cambria in Wrexham. On one picture of the couple together, the person wrote, "What were you doing talking to a 12-year-old Scottish girl's foreigner?" He has returned back to Bulgaria and spent time in the Netherlands during the past 4 years. He's uploaded dozens of videos of himself dancing and posing on TikTok. He also states Fingsack Askel in Perthshire as his favorite place. Well, wonderful. So, all right. Nothing. So I was expecting maybe to get into this and see that it wasn't exactly what we thought it was. But no, it was. It was exactly what we thought it was. So there you go. Officer spoke to him on Saturday evening, but he was not arrested or charged. Police Scotland Chief Superintendent Nicola Russell said, "We're aware of misinformation being shared on social media in relation to an incident where a Bulgarian couple were approached by youths on St. Anne Lane, Dundee, on the 23rd of August to 2025. A 12-year-old girl has been charged of being in possession of offensive weapons. She will be referred to relevant authorities, and our inquiries are ongoing. We'd like to thank the local community for their help with our investigation and would urge the public not to share misinformation about this incident or speculate on the circumstances." Okay, we'll just keep showing the video then. All right, we won't share any misinformation and we won't speculate. We'll just show you the video of it happening. And you can come to your own conclusions and call it misinformation if you want. You can watch it with your own eyes. 12-year-old girls, clearly in an act of desperation, begging the people, "Stay away from my sister, leave her alone, she's only 12, and pulling out a butcher knife she obviously stole from a kitchen and an axe she obviously stole from a woodshed somewhere to defend herself against the grown man who is now crying foul and saying he's the victim. And it's all totally legit because apparently he came here legally to work in a Indian restaurant because, God, what would the UK do without short order cooks at ethnic restaurants, right? Totally necessary for the survival of their nation. Now let's get into this article. This one is a crazy one. In fact, I'll give credit to the guy who made me aware of this. Clip number 7 here. Epstein emails leaked. Here's a little rundown of the Reason article entitled "Inside Jeffrey Epstein's Spy Industry Connections." Let's watch.
Epstein's emails with former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak are being made public for the first time, and they're generally just about how the two of them wanted to start surveillance companies together, how Epstein was organizing meetings between Barak and people like Peter Thiel, the owner of Palantir, a surveillance company that is increasingly involving itself with American and other Western governments. And you also have some really crazy ones like this, where Epstein says, "With civil unrest exploding in Ukraine, Syria, Somalia, Libya, and the desperation of those in power, isn't this perfect for you?" And there's also this one where Epstein says, "Wevi Chines looking for to start personal protection company in Beijing. Kidnapping has begun." These were released to the public by hackers. They are confirmed to be 100% real. And if you want to read a full article about it, check out Matthew Petty's article. But you can also check out TrueAnon on Twitter, who are about to do an episode about this. And I think many people thought that this was going to be about how Epstein was blackmailing Israelis. But in many ways, it's more horrifying. Because what it actually is about how Epstein, after being convicted of heinous crimes was basically using his position and his social connections to invest in mass surveillance companies that are increasingly going to dominate Western society.
Stories at Reason.com. Inside Jeffrey Epstein's spy industry connections. After his first arrest for sex crimes, Jeffrey Epstein tried to get into a new line of work, surveillance. In 2015, he partnered with former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak to invest in a security tech startup called Rapporti Homeland Security, now known as Carbine. Leaked emails show that Epstein was using Barak to seek out opportunities in the surveillance industry and build connections with powerful figures around the globe, including American businessman Peter Thiel, the former director of Israeli signals intelligence, and two people in the Russian president Vladimir Putin's circle. So that's interesting. Isn't that interesting? I find that just fascinating, don't you? That you've got Jeffrey Epstein working with the former prime minister of Israel, as well as two people close to the Russian president, and the puppet master of the current American administration. It's almost like you have this shadowy nexus of influence and, you know, psychological or spycraft operations connecting countries that to the average person would seem to be at war with one another, Russia and America. And of course, Israel, you know, supervising and coordinating all of it. Very interesting. So they're creating security programs, security companies, while simultaneously, you know, working to start wars with countries, despite being friends with people in the administration of those countries. I mean, it seems like the whole thing is like orchestrated, and the people at the top, like Jeffrey Epstein, are playing both sides of this war. What a conspiracy theory. After he was first caught sexually exploiting teenage girls, Epstein had pled guilty to soliciting prostitution in 2008. He served a little over a year in detention. Meanwhile, he invested his wealth in bizarre projects, including a ranch to breed women with his DNA and, quote, efforts to identify a mysterious particle that may trigger the feeling that somebody is watching you, according to the New York Times. Good Lord. The leaked emails show that Epstein was also interested in more mundane means of spying on and manipulating people, which overlapped with technologies governments often pursue. This interest crossed borders. Barak's email inbox was quietly posted by Distributed Denial of Secrets, a website widely considered to be a successor to WikiLeaks, and on a file sharing platform for verified journalists and researchers in May 2025. The contents came from Hendala, a hacker group named for a Palestinian cartoon character that has been leaking files taken from several Israeli officials over several months. And basically, there's a bunch of information that has since been verified that was not publicly known before being in the email leaks, which is a method of confirming their validity. The emails below, which have not been published anywhere else, paint a picture of Epstein as a man very eager to be at the nexus between private money and public surveillance. While they were hammering out the Rapporti investment, Epstein invited Barak to come to a meeting with Thiel, co-founder of PayPal and the surveillance contractor Palantir, in May 2014. Although Barak could not make that meeting, Epstein insisted that Barak spend real time with Peter Thiel and offered to set up a dinner the following month. And here you see the actual emails in that case. Peter Thiel can come to dinner on the 9th. Can you stay until then? Barak wrote to a different business associate a few days later without mentioning Epstein's role that he and Thiel would have a, quote, first date and, quote, probably spend it talking just geopolitics with an unnamed third person. In that email, Barak added that he met Thiel once before in Davos, Switzerland, but speculated that Thiel, quote, probably doesn't even recall it. The email from Ehud Barak: going to meet him tomorrow for dinner. He asked to bring another person with him. I don't know who or why. I met him once in Davos 2 years ago. Probably he doesn't even recall it. Let's see. I was told by the host, which is Jeffrey Epstein. They don't mention that. Just the host of the dinner, that we'll probably spend it just talking geopolitics. It's a first date. I think he's of huge potential to accelerate things. Things. By sheer reputation he'd got, no way it's a waste of time. Thus, I'm going to do it and we'll see. I'll let you know. Hi, Ehud. I Googled Peter Thiel. Seems to be a really interesting, smart, and active character. Did you meet him already? Best regards. It's not clear exactly what happened in that meeting. In February 26, however, Epstein pitched Rapporti to Valar Ventures, the fund co-founded by Thiel and two close partners. Quote, we'd love to hear more about Rapporti. Are you in NYC in the near term? Or would a phone call make more sense? Thanks for thinking of us, Jeffrey. Valar Ventures general partner Andrew McCormick wrote back. After meeting with the reporting team, McCormick rejected the proposal as premature, adding, "We remain fans of what you're building and hope to re-engage in the future when the story comes into clearer focus." In 2018, the Founders Fund, another firm co-founded by Thiel, joined a $15 million Series B funding round for the company, which was then renamed Carbine. While Epstein was trying to deal with his American tech sector, he was portraying himself to Russian elites as an apolitical wheeler dealer. In April 2015, Epstein introduced Barak to former Russian Deputy Prime Minister of Economic Development, Sergei Belyakov, who then invited Barak to attend the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. That wasn't the only business Epstein had in mind. Quote, "I spoke to Sergei afterwards. He will help. I suggest you send him a note that states that you think Putin and his advisors would benefit from spending some time with Jeffrey to discuss markets, currency, and the financial systems in the new world of zero interest rates, and that I'm not political," Epstein wrote in a separate email to Barak. We've barely scratched the surface of what has been revealed from these emails, but essentially you've got the former prime minister of Israel conspiring with Jeffrey Epstein to get government contracts, bringing in Peter Thiel, helping to set up his rise through Palantir, eventually leading to, you know, J.D. Vance being ordained as the next president de facto by virtue of, you know, his media portrayal over the last several years, while also conspiring with members of the Russian government, but using the Israeli prime minister to, like, sheep dip Epstein, basically. So it's Epstein telling the prime minister of Israel, "Hey, you reach out to your Russian friends, tell them to talk to me, tell them I'm apolitical and, you know, just want to help them out." Like, we're seeing a little bit behind the curtain here, a little bit of how the sausage is made in terms of international espionage and war profiteering, as well as the establishment of international surveillance states operated out of Israel and for the benefit of Mossad to spy on and obviously dominate the American and Russian political constructs while creating a war between them to profit from the death and destruction that comes about as a consequence. So it goes on and on, and you have a series of individuals, organizations, cabals, one might say, working together to, again, maximize their profitability and control when it comes to Israel's spy apparatus in America. Throughout the relationship, Epstein signaled to Barak that he was interested in keeping abreast of security-related technology, emailing Barak articles about cyber warfare, emergency preparedness, Russian nanotechnology, and Unit 8200, the Israeli equivalent of the National Security Agency. Quote, "I enjoy strategy and strategic planning, and at the same time am amazed by the rate of which technology has moved into the private sector," Epstein mused in an April 2015 email, adding, "Many corporations are looking for a new military perspective on management." So Jeffrey Epstein was like a kingpin and a primary mover in the combination, the intertwining of private and public military surveillance and geopolitical intelligence, along with Peter Thiel. Is it becoming clearer why the Epstein list will never be released? It ain't Trump, folks.
I've been hearing about this for years, and now it's all the rage. And about a year ago, they did a survey of the customers at theauctionstore.com and said, what is it you want the most? What product would you like to have? A lot of you got that email. And the number one thing was bovine colostrum. This is the highest rated, private labeled, 2,000 milligram per serving. And if you don't know what colostrum is, let me tell you. A cow's a mammal, we're a mammal. A dog's a mammal, a blue whale's a mammal. I know most of you know that. And mammals drink milk from their mother's breasts. The first milk of the first few weeks is called colostrum, and it's more clear, and it's full of all of the immunity and all the super nutrients, and it's basically God's vaccine. We've got the best bovine colostrum that we're introducing right now that you're going to find anywhere. Cellular recovery and defense matrix. It's also incredible for gut health and flora. Immune support, natural compounds strengthen your body's defenses against toxins and stress. Muscle recovery aid promotes faster tissue repair and reduces soreness post-workout or strain. Stress and energy balance delivers calm, focused energy with natural adaptogens. No caffeine crashes. Toxin Defense supports detox pathways to flush out environmental pollutants and free radicals, enhance nutrient absorption, improves nutrient uptake for better overall health without fillers. It's a hassle. I mean, because you only get this for a few weeks after the cow has a baby. It's the next best thing to mommy's milk. So it's all the rage for years. Everybody's going totally insane about it. I'm going to be taking it. This is next level. And I'll be completely honest with you. Everybody's been telling me to take colostrum for years. It's hard for me to start taking a supplement. But once I do and it works, I stay on it. I'm going to be taking this. All I hear about is how great it is.
Bill Jasper in studio momentarily. I want to go to some interesting videos first here. This is from Adam Friedland. He does a show, used to do a show we'll call C-Town, a very funny comedy show. He's a comedian. I actually really, really like this guy and what he does. But here he's interviewing Richie Torres, who's a politician from New York City, about the rise in anti-Semitism. And I just think it's a fascinating perspective from a Jewish person, you know, trying to deal with what's happening with the war in Gaza and the reaction here in America. Let's go to clip number four here. This is Adam Friedland from the Adam Friedland Show talking to Richie Torres.
And I grew up a Zionist. And we were told, and our whole community in this country is told, that we have to defend Israel and love Israel because it will stop the Holocaust. It will stop another Holocaust from happening. And my dad was born in 1951. That was 6 years after these atrocities. His friends, parents, he knew these people that had been through this hell, these skeletons. And it terrified us. And the understanding in our community is that we have to defend Israel. But I lived there, and I went to a settlement at the end of my year there, and I looked down a hill at a Palestinian village, and I saw how they lived, and I turned back and I looked at the settlement and saw how they lived. And people live in a world where they're demeaned and dehumanized and surveilled constantly by people in SWAT team outfits with semi-automatic weapons, and that's what the world is seeing. And you keep telling me that the problem is someone's getting yelled at a restaurant? I'm sorry.
You're conflating two different issues. So I don't
please. Me saying this to you right now will hurt people in my own family, okay? Because this is a very important thing to us. And the fact that I still care about being Jewish is embarrassing. I should just be a guy. But this is feels like a stain on our history. And it feels like it's changed what being Jewish is. Because what being Jewish is isn't Israel. Judaism has existed for 4,000 years. This is a country for 75 years. You know, like, it is the oldest, one of the oldest monotheistic religions. Anti-Semitism is one of the oldest forms of hatred. People in my life are going to be mad at me about this, but I'm saying this because I am Jewish.
Right, if you're not Jewish, you don't understand the North Korean level propaganda machine that is Israel and Zionism. So as a Jewish kid, you learn about the horrors of the Holocaust from like a really young age, like to the point where I literally had nightmares for like years during school. And you learn about it in graphic detail, about the gas chambers. They take you to the gas chambers like in Poland, and it's terrifying, like really terrifying, which it was in real life. But then what they do is really clever. They combine the survival of the State of Israel and Zionism to the sense that the Holocaust could never happen again. So basically saying, if you didn't have the State of Israel, we would all be back in the gas chambers. And so you've just learned about all these horrors and everything. And then they're basically like, yeah, that's why you need Israel. And then they start to relate any criticism or, you know, anti-Israel sentiment with wanting the Holocaust to happen again. So I grew up until like fairly recently seeing the flag for Palestine as literally a swastika. It becomes like representative of the destruction of Jews. So literally I went on a trip to Poland when I was younger and we went to go see the concentration camps and stuff. And all the kids were given Israel flags to take into, like, Auschwitz and stuff. So basically, they just instill this fear that, like, it's us versus them, the world hates us, and without Israel and without Zionism, we would all be back in the gas chambers. And that is why you can't hold a conversation with a Jewish Zionist about Israel, because they will see anything you say.
So again, just I think some very interesting perspectives about this. And yeah, I agree with Adam Friedland. You can just be a person. Don't let people weaponize your identity to get you to do something you wouldn't otherwise do. We'll be right back with Bill Jasper. Don't go anywhere.
Hey Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effects that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it and he's skeptical, but I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio now by Bill Jasper. He is, of course, an investigative reporter, author, and the senior editor of The New American. His books, Global Tyranny, Step by Step, The United Nations Exposed, are available on shopjbs.org. That's shopjbs.org. And, of course, the website, thenewamerican.com. That's thenewamerican.com. Mr. Jasper, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Harrison. A pleasure to be here. I've watched you for a long time. Excellent program.
Well, thank you very much. And, of course, some of our favorite guests contribute to The New American. It's really such a great publication and sort of runs the gamut. It covers, like, all sorts of stories. Right now, I understand you're focusing on uncovering some older conspiracies, the Oklahoma City conspiracies, this type of stuff, which, you know, for somebody that, you know, I got woken up by Alex Jones, you know, as a middle schooler, and I've been sort of in the conspiracy world for 20 years, I try to put myself in the mindset of somebody who just started questioning things, maybe during COVID, something like that. They have a whole wealth of history to go through to untangle all of these various conspiracies that have rocked America. Why is Oklahoma City an important one for people to know about?
Well, when we look today at what people have come to regard as the deep state, it's been very obvious during Trump 45 and then during Biden's reign of terror and now Trump 47, all the lawfare, all the deep state operatives in the intelligence community, defense community, State Department, all throughout the bureaucracy that have conspired over and over again to stop him, to deep six him, to subvert the rule of law and the Constitution. People will recognize it. Gee, something's really wrong here. We thought the FBI and the CIA and the Defense Department were on our side. Well, how did this come about? It's taken a lot of years. And so I spent a lot of time digging into the Oklahoma City bombing, which, 30 years ago. And it was very clear back then that the FBI, the vaunted protector of America's
security, yeah, the iconic,
that it had been subverted already back then. In fact, virtually every director since J. Edgar Hoover, and J. Edgar Hoover had his problems. He had certain things that he did or didn't do that were not good, but it's my opinion that he was definitely a patriot. He was for America. And that's why he is vilified so much. But
right.
Following him, we had a succession of FBI directors who were, and the current one, well, up until Cash Patel, were deep state. And that is, they were transforming the FBI from an investigative agency to protect America into one that was going to be used against America. And it was. And in Oklahoma City, we saw that coming out very, very clearly. And so for those who are younger or weren't alive at that time or may have forgotten, because it's a long time ago, on April 19th, 1995, we had the Edward P. Murrah Building in Oklahoma City blow up. And, of course, we are familiar with the images of the Murrah Building there. Well, right from the very beginning, there were certain things that just didn't add up. We were told that the perpetrator was one former disgruntled Army soldier, Timothy McVeigh. And he had an accomplice, but the accomplice wasn't with him in Oklahoma City. That was Terry Nichols. He was a buddy of his from the Army, and he was back in Kansas. So we were told that Timothy McVeigh alone was responsible for taking this Ryder truck to the Murrah Building, detonating it. The Ryder truck caused this massive damage and loss of life, the murder of these people, injury of many more. And but there was a problem there. Originally, we were told that there was a John Doe number two.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, a few days later, that disappears. No more John Doe number two. There's only Timothy McVeigh. And I immediately had gone to one of the top explosive experts in the world, the top one who ran the United States Air Force Armaments Laboratory, who tested all the explosives and everything. That was General Parton, General Benton K. Parton. And he said right from the start, the Ryder truck ANFO bomb story doesn't work. That right. won't, that you can't use air coupling. It was yards away from this building, take down these massive columns, and you can't have the asymmetric footprint in there. There had to have been demolition charges inside right. the building. And so that was one of the first things that, caused me to go directly to Oklahoma City and spend a lot of time over the next 3 years down there tracking down a lot of different leads. And it all kept going back to Department of Justice, the executive office, and the FBI. We saw time and again they were hiding evidence, destroying evidence, intimidating witnesses, disappearing witnesses, suborning evidence, committing crimes. And in fact, this became a major issue where their top guy, Dr. Frederick Whitehurst of the FBI lab, who is in charge of the explosives evidence, that he said, we have serious criminal things going on here at the lab. They're manufacturing evidence. They're destroying evidence. And it caused an inspector general's report. And so that began to unravel a lot of the story.
Right. Well, and yeah, unravel is sort of the appropriate word, right? And we're just talking about this during the break. You go into this story of Oklahoma City and you start pulling on threads and you start seeing all of these connections. You've got, like, the Clintons are involved in this. Obviously Clinton was the president at the time. But you find connections like the fact that all of the paperwork having to do with the anthrax vaccine, because when they were going to war in Iraq, they knew that Saddam had anthrax, or they thought he did because we sold it to him. And then they were vaccinating soldiers against the potential exposure to anthrax, and then tons of people got sick. There was going to be these big settlements until all of the files went up in flames. And there's like a couple things like that. I'm just racking my mind right now. Like, it's such a deep rabbit hole. There are so many strings interconnected here. It goes back to Waco and Ruby Ridge and sort of the push to destroy the militia movement in the 90s. And it's the type of thing that it's almost like a double-edged sword type thing, because people, when they wake up to what's going on, like recently, if they woke up during COVID or they woke up during Trump's administration, when you first realize it, people almost get like a panic where they're like, oh my God, everything is controlled. Everything is crazy. We gotta do something about this. And part of me wants to be like, calm down. It's been this way for decades. It's been for 30 years. They've been doing insane attacks against our own people, covering it up in the most flagrant way, killing witnesses, people disappearing, news reports going missing. I mean, so it's almost like in one hand, it's kind of blackpilling. It's kind of depressing going, oh my God, it's been this way for so long. How are we ever going to undo this?
Resistance is futile.
Right. And that's not what I want to put across. What I want to put across is like, you're just learning about this now, but like, people have been talking about this and waking people up about this for decades. And of course, Alex Jones was one of the first to talk about Waco and the Oklahoma City bombing. So it's like we've known this forever. It's been this way forever. If you're just learning about this, you got a lot of background to go through to see how they do it. Cause the good news is they were a little sloppier back then. They weren't quite as careful back then. And you can find videos of Timothy McVeigh still in uniform after they said he was ejected from the army. The sheep dipping process. I mean, what do you think is important for people to come away with at the end of studying something like Oklahoma City? You don't want them just going, oh my God, the government is evil and gets away with everything. Resistance is futile. What do you want people to come away with?
Well, what we have to do is realize that we're in mortal danger.
Right.
Our country is in mortal danger. We have dodged a bullet. You know, President Trump dodged it literally. And figuratively, we have been dodging a bullet for a long time because we have allowed our entire government to be permeated, penetrated, and really it's been turned against us.
Yeah.
And so how do we rectify that? Well, we have a chance now. The way Oklahoma City comes into this right now is in several ways. We have a new head of the FBI, a new head of the Department of Justice. This is the first time in decades where they haven't been openly identified as deep staters. They do have the ability to release documents that can indict and even convict and imprison some of the worst perpetrators of these deeds. At least they can get the information out so that we're not going to be fooled again by it. So here's one of the important things that's developed. One of the stories, and as you point out, there are so many layers to this story that it's kind of daunting for the average person to look at it. So
it's a lot easier to say it was a lone wolf. He did it by himself. We caught him, problem solved. It's a lot more complicated getting into the weeds of what really happened.
So obviously I'm biased, but I think if people want to get the big picture, the best way to do that is go to our website, thenewamerican.com/OKC. And there we have, in fact, maybe they can put up the landing page, which shows a number of the covers of our magazine that we did. We covered every aspect of the case and went in depth. And I've interviewed scads of the survivors, of the family members, of first responders, many of those who wouldn't go publicly on record because this was a very dangerous time and people were disappearing. So what we have now and what has brought this to the fore again is that Jesse Trentadue, who is an attorney from Salt Lake City, whom I interviewed years ago, and we did a cover story on. His brother was murdered, and it was reported as a suicide in his jail in Oklahoma City 3 days after the Oklahoma City bombing. And the family knew that this wasn't a suicide, and they got medical examiners and experts to say, no, this, who examined the body, and his brother, Kenny Trinity, was beaten from head to toe, brutalized, head smashed, throat slit, pretty brutal suicide.
Right. Yeah.
So he has for all these years, for over 25 years, been FOIAing the federal government. He's winning cases. Judges have ordered the FBI and the DOJ to turn over documents. Then they'd only turn over partial ones. He just doggedly has fought this. And, now he is calling on the Department of Justice to release even more of these documents, covering a lot of the different aspects of this case. And it's getting a lot of support now because he, together with writer Margaret Roberts, has put out a book, Blowback, and has been on all of the talk shows, and that is helping to create pressure. This is what we tried to do 30 years ago, and I went to a lot of the other conservative alternative media at the time, and they said, hey, you're doing a great job. We're behind you all the way. But they wouldn't touch it. They said, Clinton administration, they're too dangerous. Right. We don't want to mess with this, you know.
Man, no, it's extremely scary. I mean, we talk about people going missing and just the chilling effect that would have about people, trying to speak out about this, is absolutely devastating. And again, it was a lot easier for them back in the early 90s when you still only had, the internet barely in its nascent phases. You really only had the few big network shows. And so, you know, you get three or four, operatives in those newsrooms and you have full control of what everybody across the country knows. So things are very different now. Do you think they would have been able to pull off something like OKC nowadays with, the internet? Cause I see, you know, back then it was, you didn't question things like that. Like the idea the government would do that to its own people was so, so shocking and horrifying. People just rejected it outright. Nowadays, you know, people are very willing to question everything the government says. I don't think they could get away with something like this. What do you think?
Well, it would be much more difficult. As you pointed out, there was really no internet alternate media presence. Alex was one of the first ones, and he gave our investigative reports on the New American coverage when a lot of other people wouldn't. The History Channel, they finally did one where they primarily relied on me and interviewed me. But that was Deep Six after it.
Really? Never went to air?
No, it went to air.
Oh,
but
it did?
You can still find it someplace, but it's hard to find.
Sometimes it sneaks through. The same thing with Alex did the thing about the vaccine a while ago, and that was on mainstream television. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he was proven right. It would slip through every once in a while with basic cable.
But it is more difficult now because we have lots of citizen journalists. That has caused some other problems in that what we saw back at that time with the way the deep state controlled all of the media, we just had even the controlled opposition out there that was supposedly critical of the government was ultimately controlled. Now we have a lot of people who are out there throwing up all kinds of stuff,
right,
and we have with AI all kinds of fake news that can be put up there. So we have a different challenge in that regard, but we don't have a centralized controlled media like we did before. We have imitators of your program all over the country with podcasts and who are challenging the established narratives.
Yeah, but you're right, and that's sort of one of the reasons, again, why I'm just constantly thinking about people sort of waking up to this for the first time and where they go. And, you know, some people, again, get this, they learn about the lies that have been told and the scale of some of the lies that have been told. And so it's just, you know, it's sort of no holds barred. Everything is fake. Everybody's a fraud, whatever, whatever. And it's like it's also dangerous. That's also an extreme you don't want to go to. When you're talking about Oklahoma City, you're approaching it like a journalist. You're approaching it like a scientist that's just studying it and going, hey, physically this doesn't make sense, the story they're telling. I'm going to talk to people to try to figure out what's going on. Not approaching it from this, you know, crazy, we're just going to speculate wildly. Like, there's a way to approach what's going on and uncovering the truth and unveiling these lies where you can actually get to the truth regardless of what the mainstream media says. But you don't want to make the mistake of just going with whatever anybody says, because then you're discrediting the whole movement and the whole process of truth seeking. So, you know, what can people do you think today when looking at world events to maybe, you know, hopefully we won't have to wait 30 years for the book to come out and the FOIA request to finally be honored to get to the truth. How do you get to the truth now about some of the stuff we see going on?
Well, one of the things to do is now we all have smartphones, cell phones, cameras, is to whenever these events are happening, for instance, like over the last several years with the George Floyd riots and the BLM Antifa, with what's happening now in L.A., Chicago, New York, with the anti-deportation efforts of ICE, the attacks on ICE. There are citizen journalists out there taking video of this, and we're getting it in real time streaming, or it's being given to outlets, like yours that are putting it up there. So, we can all participate in that. But then I think it's important for people to, exercise discernment. And so that means you have to rely on proven and trusted sources. This trust is a issue that the big control media keep throwing out there. They say you have to only have trusted sources. Well, that's what the World Economic Forum says. That's right. What the Council on Foreign Relations say. It's true, but what are trusted sources? Okay, so we've been around for over 60 years, the John Birch Society and the New American. We've taken the slings and arrows. We've been accused of being conspiracy theorists and right-wing extremists and domestic terrorists, etc., because we were speaking truth
right.
to power, and the power didn't like it. And so, and yet I am told by some people that I am a CIA operative, right. You know, that's the way they discredit, you know, Alex Jones is a CIA operative.
Right, right.
Bill Jasper is a CIA. So they know that as people become more attuned to what's going on, they become suspicious of,
it's called
untrustworthy sources.
The word they use for it is Fed jacketing.
Yeah.
Right? It's sort of the opposite of sheep dipping, which is what they did with the bomber in OK, well, the Patsy in OKC. But yeah, that's such a common tactic, and it's frustrating to me because it's like, you know, some of you folks, you're just not quite as good at identifying, controlled opposition as you might think you are, because there's certainly some out there. But obviously you look at the people in the organizations with track records that have told the truth before, that have done so fearlessly, and hell, even if we've gotten things wrong or whoever's gotten things wrong, who will correct it and who will, come to terms with the reality, regardless of, you know, their bottom line or anything else. And of course, the New American is a premier example of that, as is the John Birch Society. Again, if you're just joining me, Bill Jasper is my guest. He's an investigative reporter, author, and senior editor of the New American. His books, Global Tyranny, Step by Step, and The United Nations Exposed, are available on shopjbs.org. And we're talking about the Oklahoma City bombing right now in particular. And if you haven't done your research into OKC, go to thenewamerican.com/OKC and just be prepared for to delve down a rabbit hole. Do you think that there's any chance that we get revelations about Oklahoma City or 9/11 from Donald Trump? They've been talking a lot about RFK and JFK and Epstein, but I haven't heard much about 9/11 or OKC.
Well, that's a big question. I am certainly hoping that, and it's not, I don't think, a vain hope. This is the first time I had no hope under Biden. I had no hope under either of the Bushes, or of course under Obama, or, Clinton. That was not going to happen. Could it happen now? Yes. Should it? Yes. There is undoubtedly still a great deal of pressure that will come to bear against doing that. And there are people in Trump's orbit in his administration who I am convinced are not necessarily on our side. And they're going to try to convince him that, no, this will just upset things too much. This is not the time to do it. And they'll want to delay it. And there's national security things involved. And so, Trump has shown that he does respond to pressure, and during the campaign, when he was promoting warp speed and saying, "Hey, we did a great," and his MAGA crowd started booing, he goes, "Whoa, what's that?" And it happened a couple of times, and then he changed his tune on that. And on a number of other issues too, he has shown that he will change.
You're right, and this would be such an easy victory for him. It involves the Clintons, his sort of nemesis in the political world. He could release these files and bring justice to the people that were affected, because people really died in this. We want to get to the bottom of it. Stay with us.
All the guests, dozens of them, that have taken it within 45 minutes to an hour.
have varying degrees from extreme energy. You feel really great, fog lifting, to just over the top crying. It feels so good. Cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest Ultimate Athlete in Blue. But he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended and I forgot to do this. Don't forget when he's on Owen to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. So start going to take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people it hits within about 30 minutes, start speaking after a couple hours. But just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now? Another energy spike.
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely, I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
Several weeks later.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. You were here a few weeks ago. And I do this with every guest, more than 50 of them now. Every person has had clarity, energy, a fog lift is the most common. But what's really good is the long-term effects for your stamina, your energy, your libido, your how hard you can work out. It's amazing. So I had forgotten when he was coming in, we gave him a bottle because he loved it.
Almost gone.
I had forgotten to ask you if you listened to it long-term. So just briefly, tell people the short-term effect and then now a few weeks later, the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some Methylene Blue about a half hour before, and it just gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
Well, give me some. How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Something like that. You gave me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at theallstreetsword.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, now 4 or 5 months ago, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it, I go, I don't know. I was like lifting way more, going way harder. And then I got really exhausted after about a week because it happened, the same thing happened to Rob Dew, who's a great long distance, bike rider. So he's quite the athlete. He said he was biking so hard up hills and stuff that he actually had to pull over because, his heart was going crazy. I mean, this stuff's wild.
Yeah, it's good. I like it better than doing like a 5-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
It's not a stimulant. It just skips the oxidization process somehow.
So I've been using it while I'm out there doing search and rescue. So I'm almost out.
You're saying you love it for working out. Has it gotten better over time, or what long-term thing have you felt, or if nothing?
Well, I think the main thing is it gives me a better workout, and that has good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I found without even knowing.
Yeah.
And then O'Keefe's like, oh, it made my vision better. And Rob Dew goes, we have a bunch of callers already saying that. Did you see these studies about it, like curing glaucoma? And I'm not going to say, we're not selling this a drug. I'm not saying it's going to do that. I'm like, God, this stuff's crazy. No, they don't want you to know about it. It's like ivermectin.
Right, exactly. Old school stuff.
But you can't take it if you're on SSRIs. And folks, it's so strong. Talk to your doctor first because it's not a game. Ours is really strong. If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Studio is Bill Jasper. He's an investigative reporter, author, and senior editor of The New American, and I should probably mention, president of the John Birch Society.
If they don't write it on the paper, I don't know what to say. So I'm glad we have an updated bio so we give you the full credit you deserve. His books, Global Tyranny Step by Step and The United Nations Exposed, are available at shopjbs.org. The website again, shopjbs.org, and thenewamerican.com. And again, we're just sort of talking about the process, the sort of the world that we're living in right now. And I, like you, you know, share this like excitement in all of this stuff getting exposed. And I mean, the New American and InfoWars has been in this fight for so long. Other people that are just joining are seeing sort of how far things have gone, but they don't know what it was like even just 10 years ago trying to talk about 9/11 truth or Oklahoma City truth. I mean, we are in such a different landscape today in terms of what people are willing to consider, what they're willing to, you know, give the time of day and actually, you know, judge whether or not something is true on the basis of evidence rather than just what the experts say. I really think we're in a transformative moment right now that we need to seize on and take advantage of in an intelligent and like thoughtful way, not just sort of going off the rails and saying everything is fake, everything is lost, let's go live in the woods, but rather like now is an opportunity of awakening to set things right and get justice for these events that, you know, as late as 30 years ago, the people are still around and still getting away with it. I mean, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton were part and parcel with all of the other bad actors in the Oklahoma City bombing. There's still a chance to get justice here, but something's happening with the Trump administration where they get these guys who I believe are good. I think Cash Patel is good. I think Dan Bongino is good. I think they go in. I think when they went into office, they went in fully believing they'd be able to change things. And then something happened. They had some conversation in some back room somewhere, and suddenly they changed their tune. What do you think is happening? Where is this pressure coming from? If these guys are in charge, who's got them shaking in their boots like this?
That is the big question. Everything you just said is spot on. Anyone who's seen Cash Patel or Dan Bongino, over the last month in their interviews, it's pretty clear they're, when they had to come out and say, well, yeah, the Epstein file, everything has been released. No, there's no list, all this stuff. That they have run up against a brick wall or steel doors or whatever metaphor you want to use. They have been told, it appears to me, that hey, you're not going to be able to release all the stuff that you promised. Well, who's telling them this? Well, we know that there are still hundreds of deep staters in virtually all of the bureaus of the bureaucracy. And a lot of them are very high-level people that have big bucks behind them. And so I think that particularly Dan Bongino, who looked to me like he was about ready to resign. I mean, that was pretty much the public story, and he was very conflicted in his interviews. So yeah. I would like to be able to just talk to him and have him reveal some of the conversations that are going on there, because it's clear that there are still many things that need to be revealed. Files that need to be opened, documents that need to be released. In the Oklahoma City bombing, for instance, one of the key things that Jesse Trenadu, the attorney from Salt Lake City, whose brother was murdered in the OKC case, he has tried to get the videos of the cameras that were outside the Murrah building, which show Timothy McVeigh driving up with John Doe number 2 in the truck, and there was a car following them with other John Does in it. That was, we knew about that because I talked with first responders, FBI, and police officers who were at the briefing where these videos were shown.
Right.
And they were telling me about what was on it, and they said, well, it's going to be released. It's going to be released. Then it never was released. And then we were told it didn't exist.
Right.
There were dozens of cameras all around the area. And so there were many videos that were taken that haven't been released. And what's the national security holdup on doing something like that now? It's beyond me what they could claim there. So who is being protected? What is being hidden? I mentioned Dr. Whitehurst. He was in charge of the FBI lab, and he said they were engaged in all kinds of evidence tampering, witness testimony tampering. I interviewed many witnesses who said when the FBI agents came to their business or their home to interview them, and they would tell them who they saw Timothy McVeigh with, they'd say, no, you didn't see that.
Right.
They would try to discredit that rather than taking down their testimony. And so a lot of the witnesses, they were intimidated. They wouldn't talk with a lot of the media. A lot of them ended up talking with me because I didn't challenge their testimony.
Right.
And because they knew that if they gave me their testimony and I said I'd keep it anonymous, that I would do that. And so they wouldn't get retribution for it. So we know that there's literally tons of information. When I say tons, I'm not talking metaphorically. We know that the columns from the building were taken away and buried.
Right.
General Parton, and we got many other experts such as Dr. Sam Cohen, the father of the neutron bomb, who worked on the Manhattan Project, when he and others said, yeah, well, if there were demolition charges in the building, those would still be, you could still dig up those columns and you'd be able to prove that. Well, they were all carted away and buried, and to make sure that wasn't it. Those could still be exhumed, and that's important. You know, there were a lot of people killed, and are, as a result of it, the Clinton administration, with its compliant media, demonized anyone who challenged the official narrative. You were called, as Time Magazine called it, an ideational co-conspirator with Wow. Timothy McVeigh. You were anti-government. You were
Right.
the equivalent of a co-conspirator with Timothy McVeigh. So,
wow, how convenient, yeah.
So members of Congress and the alternative media Right. all just clammed up. Well, we don't want to be identified with that.
It's so simple and so sophisticated at the same time. If you question the government's story about this anti-government militia, then therefore you are contributing to the anti-government militia's ideology. It's sad how effective these things are, but it always seems like these stories unravel, or the truth eventually gets unveiled for a couple reasons. And they mostly have to do with just physical reality. As you're talking about, you know, the bomb experts going, wait, a bomb in a Ryder truck blowing up that much of the building? There's just no way. It's just physically impossible. And you really can't argue with that. I mean, there are certain things that, you know, physics just always acts the same way. And there's certain impossibilities that they try to present as facts. And then there's this human, tenacity when, you know, a family member of yours is killed, like Trinidu's brother, and it's just, you know, you got to have somebody that's just not going to let it drop. They're not going to move on. They're not going to, you know, accept the official story because it's their brother and they're going to get vengeance. And somebody with that, you know, the tenacity and the willingness to pursue that, you know, out of a feeling of justice for their family member. It's like you almost need a combination of these things. Without one, you really don't have the other. And then, of course, you have the secret files, which never really seem to be released. It's usually the physical evidence and just the individuals affected not giving up and not giving in.
And that was still going through this. That was so true, because besides Jesse Trinidu, in fact, before him, we had Glenn and Kathy Wilburn, whose grandchildren were in the daycare center.
Right.
And they were dogged on this, and Glenn particularly, he, you know, just almost killed him when his grandkids
Right.
were killed. And so he dug in, and because he was a victim, people trusted him, and he was able to then give me a lot of leads. And not only him, but Janie Coverdale, her grandchildren were killed in the bombing as well. And she and the Wilburns, and other victims banded together, and they, were a force to be reckoned with. And it was very difficult. They wouldn't be intimidated and they wouldn't back down. And, so I really have to give them credit. And then there was one, state representative who staked everything on it and took all the slings and arrows, and that is Representative Charles Key. And he established private commission that some friends of mine were on, and Colonel George Wallace and a number of other people in the Oklahoma City area, and they dug out a tremendous amount of information. So it was these patriot citizens and aggrieved parents and grandparents that really fought against the whole might of Louis Free and his FBI and Janet Reno and Department of Justice, Bill Clinton, Bill and Hillary Clinton, and their whole evil gang. Yeah. And it was, I think, a big coming forward, a big breaking point was James Comey and the FBI. So finally people saw that, okay, well, leader of the FBI and leader of the CIA, we got John Brennan, we got James Clapper and Comey. Here's the big triumvirate of big government, big intel, deep state, and they're all proven to be lying and covering up, and so
and willing to go to insane lengths. I mean, that's always the thing with me is you tell people, you know, okay, maybe it seems crazy. Why, you know, you think the government would kill, you know, this many of its own people? And it's like, well, what is the Ukraine war about? And that apparently has killed 1.7 million Ukrainians. These people aren't scared of killing millions of people if they think it'll get their way. It's just kind of strange to me that people will write this stuff off as if, oh, the government will never do that. It's like, no, they're doing it right now. They're just, you know, doing it under the guise of war or national security. They're willing to kill untold numbers of people if they think they can get away with it. Why wouldn't they? And so you've got this, these people that have just pursued this stuff doggedly. And, you know, sort of the tragic thing about it, and it reveals, you know, the true character of the mainstream media is, if we had a real mainstream media, if we had real investigative journalists, these are the types of stories that they would be jumping on. I mean, they present themselves as, you know, holding truth to power, and they're the ones that came out with Watergate, and they're not afraid to tell, you know, the reality and expose the criminal actions of our government. But yeah, try being a survivor of the Oklahoma City bombing and going to the media to tell your version of the story, to tell them about how you saw, you know, two guys get out of the car rather than just one. The mainstream media would shut you down just as quick as the FBI would. And so you need people like yourself, magazines like The New American, and of course, outlets like InfoWars and Alex Jones, being just willing to say this stuff and platform these people, and get these messages out, because otherwise the mainstream media is 100% complicit in the cover-up, as much or more so than the FBI or anybody else. And in that vein, I want to go quickly to clip number 14. It's just one little minute video, but just a reminder of what the coverage was like. This is Alex Jones talking about the Oklahoma City bombing back in the early 90s. Let's watch.
And we've got to understand is multiple seismographs picked up multiple explosions. CNN reported it. CNN in the first days reported multiple bombs being removed and filmed it. I've shown it on TV here on Access Television, five different documentaries I provided. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. Intimidation of grand jury, you name it. And who gained from this? Clinton got three anti-terrorism bills, really terrorism against American people. Bill Clinton got a bunch of his wiretaps and things, but his big wiretapping package got defeated. Bill Clinton had a 32-33% approval rating when it happened. Even CNN a few months ago admitted that, yes, Clinton, that even the mainstream media, that's when his approval rating went up to 66% now. That was the turning point, because the media could say right-wing this, right-wing that, the right-wingers are taking over. See, you don't want the realignment of these freshman Republicans that want to cut taxes.
So there's Alex Jones doing what he does to this day, you know, nearly 30 years ago, covering the Oklahoma City bombing. And it's been the same sort of playbook over and over. And the reason false flags are so successful is because the attack's not false. The flag is false, right? People really died. The city was really bombed. And so people are going to want vengeance, or they're going to want somebody to do something. It's a chance for the government to show it's in charge and, you know, get people's loyalty that way. I mean, there's so many, you know, positives from this. And so I guess it's up to us to make the negatives outweigh the positives, right? It's up for folks like us, the New American, John Birch Society, InfoWars, to go, if you do this, we're going to expose you and you're going to be worse off than before. So just don't do the false flag. Don't try to pull it off. We're going to expose you. So I think there's, I think, you know, what's happened in the information war has really had a major impact on the ability of the deep state to pull this type of stuff off.
Well, it has. And another facet of that, which you haven't hit on, is that when we do this, if we get enough coverage so that political figures in Congress feel that they can step out and right. not be squashed because they will have public support, we will have more and more congressmen and senators and state legislators and state attorney generals and whatnot who will step up. And we're seeing that happen all across the country, particularly in the red states. We have attorney generals who have brought lawsuit against the Biden administration, currently have lawsuits going against different federal agencies, against the Federal Reserve, against the EPA, et cetera, against all these oppressive regulations and unconstitutional acts that federal agencies are engaged in. And we didn't have that a couple of decades ago, and that is because it was not viewed as safe politically to do anything like that. And of course, Trump has benefited from that. And then he in turn has made challenging the establishment, the deep state, something that is not just, politically viable, but even fashionable.
Right. Almost necessary at this point. I mean,
so there's a lot to be very thankful and excited about. And that doesn't mean, so at the New American, we have supported Donald Trump as Trump 45 and during all the lawfare against him during the Biden administration and as Trump 47 on those areas where he is hewing to the Constitution, where he's doing the right things. We're not 100% behind him. I just wrote a couple of articles very critical of him in our insider report about his new China deals because I think that his TikTok flip-flop and his flip-flop on NVIDIA and AMD, giving them all these AI chips and saying, oh, well, we're going to get 15% tax back on it. We're going to have to spend $200 billion to offset whatever advances they make in their weapon systems.
Right.
It jeopardized our national security. So we're not 100% behind him.
Right.
We recognize that one man is not going to save this country. We have all of us a responsibility. It's not enough to put a bumper sticker on your car every 4 years or go vote in every quadrennial election. No, being a patriot, being a citizen, a civic-minded person today means you recognize that we are at war and we're in a death struggle. And enemy wants to take away everything from you, your children, your grandchildren. And if you have a sense of obligation of passing on all the innumerable benefits that we have here, all the freedoms, you're going to want to be engaged in that fight.
Yeah. You almost have to. I mean, it's not even really a choice at this point. I feel like you're obliged to, if you've benefited from what this country's given you, it's a selfish thing just to allow it to go away because you don't feel like fighting. And it is just about recognizing that humanity's under attack and you have to step up and stop them because they're not asking you whether or not, you know, you're going to be okay with this. They aren't saying, you know, let's put it to a vote. Do you want to eat bugs? And everybody says no. And they say, okay, never mind. Like they're doing this to you. They're going to be doing this to your children. And it's not us saying this. It's them saying it. It's them writing laws to take your children away from you if you don't, comply to their transgender ideology or whatever else that they want to impose on you. You have to get involved. You have to fight back. And so I guess the question is, what do we do knowing that Trump is not enough, knowing that Trump is not going to save us? And I never thought he was, but obviously it was a necessary thing. It wasn't in total. It wasn't complete once he got, sure. But it was a necessary step to get him elected. What do we do next? Where do we go from here? Is somebody going to pick up the torch? Is it going to have to devolve to the states? I mean, what do you think we can be doing knowing that Trump's not going to not going to solve everything for us. How do we solve it for ourselves?
Good. That's a very good question. Very good point. So, at the John Birch Society and the New American, we focus on the Constitution. Most of the government programs, most of the government agencies, most of the government bureaucracy is unconstitutional. It's been through accretion over the past several decades since World War II and the FDR, we have seen an explosion of government growth. And the founder of the John Birch Society, Robert Welch, who was a brilliant man, he was a polymath and, child prodigy, but a very sensible, responsible man. He said, the greatest tragedy of the 20th century has been the growth in the size and the cost and power of government at all levels. Mm-hmm. And so our motto is less government, more responsibility, and with God's help, a better world. So we have to take it upon ourselves to unravel and disengage this whole monstrosity that has been developing over these decades. And that means that it's going to be painful in some cases because most of us have become dependent at some level. I mean, most businesses that consider themselves private businesses, they get government contracts. Right. And every one of these government agencies hands out more contracts. So more and more people become dependent on the government. We have now millions of Americans who are dependent on the government for their paycheck. They work for this government agency, that government department, et cetera. And so, liberty is really a finite thing. If you keep chopping away parts of it, pretty soon there's none left. And there are not enough people really producing to pay for the whole game there. And so, we have to start taking that apart. And that means those congressmen and senators, they're the ones under our Constitution that have the legislative power. All legislative power here in Granite shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which will be composed of a Senate and a House of Representatives. That means all lawmaking. They have abdicated their responsibility. They're allowing the EPA and OSHA and every other government agency to pass regulations, to put out regulations, which they claim have the force of law. They don't. They're unconstitutional. So we need to support those efforts. Like right now, there is legislation. If you go to jbs.org, which is the website for the John Birch Society, we have local chapters where people can get together with other like-minded patriots, work at the local level, and work at the congressional level to change Congress. So my congressman just put his name on the Defund Act to get us out of the United Nations and defund the United Nations. Why did he do that? Well, because a bunch of members of my chapter and others kept dogging him on that. And so he said, well, I guess I better get on it. So last week he jumped on it and became co-sponsor.
Bada bing, bada boom. That's the way it works. I mean, the one thing they want you to do is to believe it's too late, it's too far gone, it's not worth it, I better not fight. That is the way that they guarantee they win, and they win easily. I mean, if they can win just by, they don't have to batter your door down if you're sitting there opening it for them, so don't open the door for them. At least make them earn it. If they're gonna make you a slave, at least fight them while they do it. Don't go easily into that night. My guest has been Bill Jasper, president of the John Birch Society. Shop at jbs.org, thenewamerican.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
Stay tuned, folks. Alex Jones, 90 seconds.
What really makes a nutraceutical work? What is a nutraceutical? What is a supplement? Yeah, I mean, let's just talk about Power Plant, for example. So Methyl Drive is something that everyone, whether they're 12 or whether they're 90, they should all take it. Power Plant is a little bit more specific. It's good for both men and women. I would say it has a stronger, more pronounced factor on the younger side, especially people that are into high-intensity exercise. Key ingredient in that is cordyceps, which increases your oxygen carrying capacity, but it also increases ATP, and it also helps you make new mitochondria. So imagine taking something like cordyceps found in power plant and then combining it with methyl drive. But oh, wait, there's also total male mineral support in power plant. We've got zinc, which increases luteinizing hormone, which makes you produce more testosterone. But then to counteract the rise in sex hormone binding globulin, we include boron in it to increase your free testosterone. That's something that normal formulas don't do. We've got the thing that creates free testosterone in your body in power plant, according to studies. That's Mainline. You can Google it.
And not all CoQ10 is the same, right?
Everyone should take CoQ10. Listen, and if you're going to take CoQ10, you're going to go to some store or some pharmacy, and they're going to try to sell you a bottle with the same amount that's in here for like $50. You get CoQ10 plus four other ingredients with this.
It's true. And the same amount.
Same amount. It's incredible. We make this stuff for you and for ourselves. Everyone at the InfoWars office is gobbling these supplements left and right. That's why I made these, is so I could take them.
And then you designed it to go with our ultramethylene blue.
Absolutely. That's the key. Before any, like, man or woman, young and old, if you're on methylene blue, you got to take it.
Everybody loves the formulas, and I've noticed if I take both together, the energy is totally insane. Each one is very strong on its own.
Methyl drive is something that every person in the country should take.
So the methylene blue is like the engine and gasoline. These products together is the nitrous oxide.
Exactly. It turbocharges.